you.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for watching.
Hey, hey. Now, don't you tell me you don't remember me, because I sure as heck buyer remember you.
Not a chance.
Ned! Ryerson! Needle-nosed Ned, Ned the Head, come on, buddy, Case Western High. Ned Ryerson, I did the whistling belly button trick at the high school talent show. Bing! Ned Ryerson got the shingles real bad senior year, almost didn't graduate. Bing again! Ned Ryerson, I dated your sister Mary Pat a couple times till you told me not to anymore. Well?
Ned Ryerson?
Bing!
Bing! So did you turn pro with that belly button thing, Ned? Or
no, Phil, I sell insurance.
What a shock.
Do you have life insurance? Because if you do, you could always use a little more. Am I right or am I right or am I right? Right.
Ned, I would love to stand here and talk with you, but I'm not going to.
Hey, that's all right. I'll walk with you. You know, whenever I see an opportunity now, I charge it like a bull. Ned the Bull, that's me now. You know, I got friends of mine who live and die by the actuarial tables, and I say, hey, it's all one big crapshoot anywho. Tell me, have you ever heard of single premium life? Because I think that really could be the ticket for you. Oh, God! It is so good to see you. What are you doing for dinner?
Something else. It's been great seeing you, Needlehead. Take care.
Watch out for that first step. It's a doozy.
And now, coming to you from the CD Game Exchange Studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio, this is the Rick Emerson Show.
Fantastic. Thank you for coming along. Hello, hi, how are you today? It's 3 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11, and this is the month of August of the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970, Solid State Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I am he. Welcome to another Friday. Thank you for being out there, and welcome to day 12. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. 2970. If you'd like to join us with your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your corrections, your 2 cents, your what have you. If you want to email, you can do that to anybody and everybody on the show. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Sarah at 970.am. Pardon me. Tim at 970.am or Scotty J at 970.am. Fantastic. Here's why I got to Groundhog today. I went so far as to prepare an entirely different speech. But then I started thinking about sneakers and how somebody had referenced sneakers the other day by talking about Ben Kingsley. God, I cannot kill my friend. Ted, kill my friend. Which in turn made me think about, my name is Warner Brandeis, my name is my passport, verify
me.
Well,
Joni has that for her MySpace thing right now.
Really?
Yeah, it's like, my name is Joni, you know, that's my voice in my passport, please verify me. I wrote sneakers, and she didn't think anybody would get it. I'm like, come on.
Oh, everybody. See, sneakers is one of those films.
Another one like Groundhog Day.
Exactly. Where, not a big hit at the box office. But over time, it trickled into the culture. Because, you know, Office Space is the definitive example of that. A movie that didn't... The Office Space just bombed abysmally. I've mentioned that, actually. The Office Space, I think, was playing the first week I lived in Portland. And I went to the theater, and it was like two people. Same with Shawshank Redemption. You went to see that? No one. And then, but slowly but surely, like so much radioactive groundwater, it seeps into the cultural peat. And the same thing with sneakers. You know, sort of a cult classic, but eventually everybody that we know has seen it. Ditto Groundhog Day. Here's the weird thing about Groundhog Day. The strange thing about Groundhog Day is that it is embraced by such a weird and disparate group of people. Same with the Shawshank Redemption. If you go watch the Shawshank Redemption 2-disc DVD, which I strongly encourage you to buy, perhaps from CD Game Exchange the next time you're out, there's a whole documentary on there about how religious groups have seized upon the Shawshank Redemption as some way to teach about the redemption of Jesus and blah, 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 and God, and da-da-da-da, whatever. With Groundhog Day, it's the same thing. I saw this whole documentary one time. It was some documentary that a guy had made. I don't think it was on the Groundhog Day DVD. I think it might have been on the interwebs or whatever. But it was how, regardless of your religious outlook, whether one was religious or not, whether one belonged to a certain denomination or whether one didn't, the Groundhog Day had been embraced by all kinds of different religious groups as an allegorical tale to their particular take on faith. Like, I think even they said that even Buddhists had grabbed onto Groundhog Day because the Buddhists believed that Groundhog Day was a story of reincarnation until one righted one's karma and then elevated to a higher plane. Because they said if you're a Buddhist, they said that the movie is entirely sort of a Zen Buddhist allegory where, what's his name, Phil Connors living the same day over and over again, constantly reincarnated, every day getting a little bit better. And then at the end of the movie, he balances his karma. And then he is saved. Then he is whatever. Then he ascends to a higher plane or whatever the hell. And then he goes and he bothers a bunch of people at airports and gives them crap they don't want. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming along. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. It is Friday. And let's have a big exhale after yesterday. All right, then. Coming up today, we have CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard, who will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. And we're going to follow up on the retiring of Dennis Hastert, who looks a lot like the skipper from Gilligan's Island. But we're not going to talk about that. We do actually have follow-up questions about that and Iran. And then I think we have the definitive word on this whole business of commas, semicolons, apostrophes, and all kinds of obscure punctuation marks.
Can't wait.
Don't even get me started on diacritical references, because I'll do it. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. We sandwiched him. I love Ed and all, but we sandwiched him between two other CNN correspondents because Ed's Johnny Buzzkill today. Let's see, we've got... I think everything Ed is talking about today is depressing. Let's see, there's a hurricane hitting, the Caribbean. Michael Vick, I guess, is going to plead guilty because he's just an ass, and really the sooner he gets himself out of the headlines, probably the better for that guy. But then he's got this Utah mine collapse where things just continue to go... It really is like all the assembled bad luck in the entire world has just descended on Utah. So we'll have a brief update on this. God, just like the most poorly handled... I mean, I know I'm no one to pass judgment, and yet, behold, it really does seem like just the most poorly handled rescue in the history of everything. And then later on, CNN radio correspondent James Roop will join us today. We'll talk a little paparazzo news. We'll have that. Also, the top five. We will get to that today. I swear to God... I swear to God and on my mother's grave, as Meatloaf would say, that we will get to that top five. That will happen. Scott Daly from Film Fever Radio is going to be here. Now, I know Superbad opens today, and I don't believe he was able to see it because I think Superbad screened the same night as the 48-Hour Film Festival, in which he played a big role with Aaron Geek and the City Durant's team. But we will talk about Superbad because the advance word on that is really good, and it stars Michael Cera, who... Good Lord willing, we'll be playing Nick Twisp in the film adaptation of Youth and Revolt. So it's big news. So we'll talk about that and talk a little bit about the concept of teen sex comedies as a whole. Because that's the thing, that there was a whole long dark tunnel for teen sex comedies where they didn't really exist. They weren't really around. They didn't really get made. I mean, they sort of peaked with the Porky's films, and then there was a glut, and then they vanished, and they started to come back with American Pie, and now they're in full swing once again. So we'll talk about the... And that is a uniquely American phenomenon, I think. I think that is it's a distinctly Yankee form of filmmaking, the zany teen sex comedy. We'll talk about that. We have a copy of, I think, the final copy today of Kissology Volume 2 on DVD. Kissology Volume 2, we will give that away today. I think we actually have... My pen has just come apart. I love this pen. And it just came apart in my hands. Oh, that's no good. Literally just fell apart like...
Life is hard, Rick.
Fell apart like so much overheated flan. Thank you, Scotty. Scotty just gave me a different pen. Yes, I can't work under these conditions. What the hell was I talking about? Blah, 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 blah. Kiss. I don't know where I was going with that. I had something. Well, it's gone now. So all that's coming up. Lisa Goddard, Ed McCarthy, Jim Roop, Scott Daly, Top 5, Kiss Contest. Oh, we have a few other things we're going to be giving away today. Some of those we will get to on the air. Some of those are going to be going out to the Glorious Bastards, as I say. If you are an AM970 Glorious Bastard, you may be contacted today. Today. Hear this? Hear this? Right here. You know what that is? That is a VIP pass to the AST Do Tour, the Vans International AST Do Tour, happening. Well, it's happening all weekend long, actually. We have VIP passes that are going to get you, someplace that you wouldn't be able to get otherwise. They're going to let you mock other people. Basically, that's what this is. It really is a scorn enabler. That's kind of, they don't like to label it as that, but that's really what it is. It is a sort of condescension tool that you can use for the unwashed. So we're going to be giving away some of these VIP passes to the AST Vans International Dew Tour. Those are going to be going out today via email to a lot of the AM 970 Glorious Bastards. There is still time to sign up. It's 11:11 right now. If you want to do that, I don't know. If you get that done by the bottom of the hour, you may be in luck. 503-733-2970 is our phone number today. Also, we're going to be giving those away in person as well at the Dew Tour, which is from 2 o'clock till 9 o'clock today. We're going to be out there in person. So there you go. There you go. I got this big pile of email to get to, a whole passel of news. Let's see. Is there anything else on here that I have not teased that I need to? I got a little bit of update. I forgot to bring it in today, but I did get my passport.
Oh,
my passport arrived in the mail yesterday.
Crap, I forgot to take off those days yet.
Oh, yeah, you got to fill that out. Otherwise, I'll be in London and you'll be sitting here with Scotty.
Damn it.
Yeah, that's no fun.
Okay.
All right, so I did get my passport. I look terrible, by the way. The photograph, I just look like I came out of a sweat box.
Awful.
Yeah, it's like the worst. My hair's all stringy in my face and whatnot. It really is a completely terrible, irredeemable photo of me. We'll get to your calls in just a second. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Why, hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Would you like to share your tale of woe and injury with everybody? Because you're limping today.
Man, I whacked my knee on the bathroom door. It really, really hurts. I think I broke something.
The bathroom door here or at home?
Here.
And so how did
because I'm kind of weird, and if somebody else is in the bathroom, I go and use the single one.
So, well, see, I always use the single one.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, there's somebody in there, so I have to find something to do really quick. So I walk in there, I'm like, oh, I see somebody in there. So I go in, I grab some toilet paper, and then blow my nose.
Wait, hold on, let me understand this, because I know people find this interesting. No, because I do the same thing, and I should.
So I don't want to be like a freak. Like, I don't want the person to think that I'm not in there because of them, because clearly I am.
I don't always use the unisex, which I think we can speak plainly. It's the handicap bathroom. I don't always use that, but I do sometimes, you know, depending. So do you, if you go into the all-purpose female bathroom and there's somebody in a stall doing whatever business, do you stand in front of the mirror and pretend to be primping?
No, I always grab a piece of toilet paper like I need to blow my nose.
Uh-huh. And then do you just...
And then I leave.
But, so you don't stay.
No.
You don't stay and wait them out.
No, so I pretend I'm in there for a purpose, and I grab the toilet paper, and then I leave, and then I just go into the other bathroom.
See, if I go in there, and there's like a, you know, whatever, feel like a guy's getting ready to be done, you know, getting ready to zip up and be out of there, I'll actually kill time in front of the mirror pretending that I'm examining, like, one of my eyebrows or something for, like, you know, just doing something that they're, and they know that you're fooling, right? That there's no need for you to sit in front of a mirror and look at your nose.
And there's no reason for you to be standing in there after... You know, they're in there, and it's quiet.
No, it's all the awkward.
Yeah.
Well, was it Scotty? Scotty, were you the one who made this note? It might have been Dave Zinn who made this observation. That, and this is, I think, a male phenomenon. I don't know if this happens to women. A man is in the bathroom, in a communal bathroom, in the stall, doing the sit-down business. It's like there is this sort of cone of non-existence. Not just a cone of silence. Like a cone of non-existence. You don't speak. There's no acknowledgement. You don't talk to a man. Like, and I've talked about this before, that guys standing next to each other at a stall, it's kind of weird talking to each other there anyway. But, I mean, I guess it happens every now and again. If something really needs to be said. A guy's in the stall, sit-down business happening. You don't talk to him at all. You don't talk to him. He doesn't talk to you. There's no acknowledgement there one way or the other. It just doesn't happen. And if a guy does, I don't know. Like, if you've ever been that guy, you're there and you're sitting in the stall and somebody will speak to you. Like, somebody comes into the bathroom and he'll recognize your shoes. So, how's it going? He's like, don't talk to me. You don't see me. I'm not here.
All right. Rick, look what I have in my hand.
Hey, is that from Coffee People?
I am drinking my first Coffee People coffee in like a year.
Fantastic. Is that non-fat vanilla latte?
And it tastes exactly
whatever?
The same.
Of course. That's on the corner of Southeast Oak and Grand, a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show. Anyway, so you're coming out of the bathroom and the door close on your knee?
You know, I'm a freak. Yeah. So I get in there and then I get my little bit of toilet paper and then I'm leaving and I'm kind of all flaily and slam my knee against those, you know, weighted doors, which hurt. I just crunched and I think I did something to my knee.
Is it actually making a cracking sound
as
you walk around?
It's making some weird cracking noise.
Yeah,
I think I might have snapped off a part of it.
Uh-huh. You know, the next thing, you're going to be in one of those big MRI tubes, like in The Exorcist, me rattling you around and doing some sort of electro scan of your spine. All right. Are you armed with that? Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, working on the following stories today for your edification.
Chocolate rain.
Oh. so I just, oh, this is a miscommunication on our part. Okay, hold on. Throw it over to me.
Oh, I'm throwing it.
Okay. I'm sorry. That was a total miscommunication. I failed the plan.
Scotty J.
Thank you.
His jokes barely register as lame Scotty J. Buys his underwear used on eBay, Scotty J. Likes the strippers upstairs at Dante's, Scotty J. Screens the calls and makes Rick go insane, Scotty J.
Hello, Scotty J. How are you today?
Well, good morning.
Scotty J.
Oh, that's me. Sorry. There we go.
It's never ending.
No. Yeah, you can't be gotten rid of. So I got a phone call this morning at about 8 o'clock from Tim Riley, and he just sounded terrible. And this is what he said. He goes, I'm suffering some severe kind of gastrointestinal stress. I don't believe I should be on a MAX train today.
Not yet.
And I knew not to inquire further. That's when somebody says something like that. There are understood code phrases in our society. One of them is, I have a little bit of stomach upset. That's, you know not to push any further with that. I guess there are three or four different things that could cause that statement, but you just don't want to know about any of them, you know? It's understood. You don't imply further. You don't ask further. The implication is enough. So we are sans Tim Riley today. He'll be rejoining us on Monday. But the good news is,
somebody's excited to have some extra work.
That means there's even more work on the narrow bone-like shoulders of Scotty J. Hello.
Yes, get well soon, Tim.
How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you like to know what Scotty's suffering from today? He actually called it this morning. He actually called it the beer bottle flu. So, did he not learn your lesson?
Never.
I mean, it was less than a week ago.
No, but him and his wife, no, they've since made good. I think it's taken this full week. And I think last night they tied one on.
Does that mean you're drinking together?
That's correct.
I was just kidding. Seriously? So now you're just getting drunk with Mrs. J.
So you're sealing your relationship by getting drunk together.
Let's seal the relationship with
Is she still smoking?
We went out with our mortgage broker friend, so.
Is she still smoking?
Talked finance.
Why are you not talking to me?
She's been trying to quit, so.
No, but
you guys totally smoked
last night.
No. I'm saying she has actually been joining the bandwagon and trying to quit.
Did she smoke last night?
That's a
yes or a no question.
Here's the deal. I think out of
Scotty,
the whole night,
Scotty,
she smoked maybe
someone is still whipped. Someone is still in the doghouse.
No, this is for real. I mean, she used to smoke more when she drank. She smoked like one last night.
All right, so let me understand that. But anyway, so the key to your togetherness now is just to be drunk with Mrs. J.
Sure.
What a happy vibe there must be in your home. Your children must come home every day and long. I bet your children don't even want to go to school. It's so pleasant at your house. I bet your kids just want to be home all the time.
Well, the kids were gone, number one. Uh-huh. And number two, we took our friend out, so it was kind of a fun evening.
Okay.
Kind of fun, huh?
All right.
little
keychain party?
Little wet swap in there?
Yeah, right.
See, I wasn't even going to use that phrase.
Yeah, we gapped it up off of Macadam, so.
What does that mean?
What does that mean?
Oh, you went to the Buffalo Gap.
We were gapping it.
Is that the clothing
store? Stop saying gapping.
Buffalo Exchange. What is the Buffalo Gap?
It's a bar.
It's
right near the other place that we used to work.
What kind of a bar is it?
It was fun because they had three bars in one.
Yeah. Oh, is it a white man's blues bar?
Well, sort of.
Sarah just mouthed the word totally.
I'm trying to remember what song I told you this morning that the guy played again. Now I can't think of it.
Well, hold on a second. So is this a bar for the white man who feels like he's got soul?
I think people hang out there, but it's definitely more of like, it's like, oh, hey, I'm a businessman. Let me loosen my tie and go and hang out where the kids are.
Well, doesn't that make sense?
Oh, you said they played the Hey There Delilah song.
That's right. That was actually
terrible. I mean, I love
really
that song.
Good.
I really do. But the idea of that being played in a bar full of white people there to hear blues, the idea of them busting out some like emo song just seems like the worst thing on earth.
Yeah.
All right. Well, whatever. What stories are ye working on today, Scotty J?
Well, Elvis boosts the economy of two states. Two jetliners nearly collide in L.A. Amy Winehouse pulls the plug on her concert, and stocks jump on a discount rate cut today. So get out there and buy real estate.
You can't shill for your wife's business on the show.
Seriously, I don't know that you're allowed to do that.
No, I'm just trying to help the economy.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you so much. And then you'll be doing the news this afternoon during Lycus as well. Are you excited?
Absolutely. 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Fantastic.
The day never ends.
Nope. When you're Scotty J, the work continues forever. All right. Well, I don't have time to talk a lot about last night. We've got a break here in a few minutes. I'll talk to you Dr. Lisa Goddard. But I do, let me just say this, I do hold in my hand. Not only did I get my passport, but Laura and I went out to dinner last night, and she has assembled an initial list of things that I am doing in London. Things that I am doing in London that we can... So
has Laura been to London?
No. No, I don't think she has.
Oh, I remember her and I drunkenly talking at Richard Cheese about how it's going to help you.
She wants me to give you her email address so you can send her a list of stuff to do.
Absolutely. And I have my books still, I believe. I don't know how much has changed, but I have my books from like 6 years ago.
She's so great. And look, and I can say this, you know, she really is cute the way that she just is so earnest about the whole going to Europe thing. Like, she bought the language lessons, you know, CDs, and she's been, like, listening to the Italian CDs, and she bought, like, the, you know, she got, like, the electronic, like, the little, it looks like a pocket calculator, but it converts, like, time and money and every, like, metric to whatever and all that. I mean, she is, like, a total REI prepared for her overseas trip, just queen. So she's bought all this stuff. She's got, like, she went and bought, like, the airline kit. It's, like, the inflatable pillow plus eye mask plus earplugs. I mean, she really is all bent. Because she's in Europe for 3 weeks before I even get over there. And then she and I are in London. I've talked about this. She's going to be over there. She's going to be doing Italy and wherever the hell else. By coincidence, we happened to go out to this Italian restaurant last night that's sort of in our neighborhood, a place that we like a lot. And at this Italian restaurant, I won't say which one it is, but at this Italian restaurant, one of the waiters... Do you ever meet somebody who is from another country and you swear to God they have a fake accent? Do you know what I mean? Like, their accent just seems like it can't be real. It just seems so stereotypical.
Most of the time it is.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe they hire the guy just to lend, you know, just to give the place some sort of cachet. But the guy comes over to our table, and I can't do the Italian accent. He's like, hello, you know, with mademoiselle. I guess that's French. But he comes, so, buena sera, would you like an appetizer? And he's totally got just the most over-the-top, and he's the very stereotype of the swarthy Italian guy. Like, he's got, like, the tightest-fitting black jeans you could possibly imagine. And then he's got the belt, and the belt is really tight with then, like, the long end of the belt with, like, the silver stud at the end that, like, trails off. And he's got, like, and then he's got the tight shirt that's unbuttoned to, like, halfway down his chest. And he's got, like, the, you know, and the jet black hair and so forth. And you can tell, and he opens his mouth and the Italian accent comes out. And my wife's like, maybe I should ask him where to eat in Italy. And I'm like, you know, don't do that. Don't be an American in Southeast Portland asking the Italian waiter where you should eat when you go to Italy. That just seems like a bad idea. So, anyway. All right, let's get these. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
How's it going, Rick?
Hi there, sir.
Man, I got a lot of things. First of all, the show yesterday was awesome, for sure.
Thank you.
I mean, it was really great. I even got a lump in my throat for hearing Peter Criss about his rock and roll. I mean, that's like an all-time fantasy, to be rocking on stage and have your folks looking over at you at Madison Square Garden.
Can I just tell you this? I heard from so many people yesterday, male, female, young, old, people, probably 80% of them started the emails with the phrase, Rick, I'm not even a Kiss fan, but let me tell you. And I cannot tell you the number of people who emailed in yesterday who said, hey, I'm not really a Kiss fan, but by the way, that Peter Criss story had me crying like a woman. You know what I mean?
Oh, I totally look at that guy a whole new way now.
Totally.
You know, I looked at his face paint, and I was like, the weaker of the three, you know, or the four.
He's fantastic, and he just had such that cool New York vibe going on with him, you know?
Oh, straight up.
Coolest guy, yeah.
And then I have another thing. Actually, I got a couple things. I've always tried to call you guys a lot. I've been listening for a long time. And I'm loving that you guys are getting into Lost, straight up. And then Deeso totally kicks ass.
Excellent.
And then in Groundhog's Day, have you tried to count how many days he recounts?
No, actually. I mean, is there a definitive answer to that? Do we know?
I don't know. I lose count because he gets, like, slapped, like, 13 times. And then the toaster and then the train.
Well, there's a montage in the middle of it, too,
that's
right?
True, yeah, where it's just him. I think that's what he's referring to, where he just gets slapped. And then there's where he's avoiding Ned Ryerson and, you know,
and
whatever.
The
yeah, and then the homeless guy.
Trying to save the homeless guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that.
Oh, now I don't know. Now I'm going to have to go watch it this weekend and figure it out.
Yeah, I knew you were going to be on it.
All right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
Oh, yeah, no problem, man. Right, you guys rock.
Thank you. All right, there you go. You know, by the way, I was talking about that idea that they ought to be selling a Groundhog Day clock that wakes you up with the I Got You, Babe, and then it has the little flip numbers that go to 6 a.m. You know what somebody pointed out to me? Is that with the number of geeks that we've got in the audience, all you'd really need is to find one of those old clocks that has the flip numbers. And there's some nerd in the audience who actually, in probably a week or so, could build that. All you'd have to do is equip it with a little MP3 player inside, and it would actually, and you could build your own Groundhog Day clock.
Yeah, and you can project the actual real time on the ceiling. Have you seen those kind of clocks
Well,
before?
But this, what I was saying is, like, if you had a digital clock somehow, you could actually have either two dials, one with the real time, one with the Groundhog Day time, or it could flip back and forth between 6 a.m. and whatever the real time is. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
What's up?
Hey, well, you know, I wanted to be the first to call in today and just give you mad, mad compliments on yesterday's show. It absolutely was the best show ever.
Thank you, sir.
Dude, well, and you know, I mean, it was really weird how it started out because you had like two or three callers call in and they're just like, hey, I just wanted to, you know, just tell you how much I love the show, you know, after that guy the day before. And it started off like that. And then you just had one great interview after another and then, you know, Storm's in there. And it absolutely, it took, you know, top of the charts. And, you know, really, there's only one other Rick Emerson moment that really is number one for me that sealed the deal years ago. But, yeah, like, yesterday was awesome.
Well, now you have to tell us. Now you can't give us that lead up and not tell us the other moment.
All right, dude. Do you remember the day that you had to do the snuff watch for Mr. Rogers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the big buzzkill moment. Yeah.
You know, it is weird because I was...
cried like a girl.
Me and my now ex-wife were sitting there listening. We're like, what? No! You know, and we listened to the little tribute.
Yeah.
And then at the end, dude, you
Oh, no, I blubbered like a child.
You choked.
No, totally.
When we heard that crack in your voice, we choked up, dude. And man, ever since then.
It was the darkest moment ever. But, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? He's Mr. Roger. What's like Peter Criss? You know, somebody that you grow up with who makes an impact on you like that. And, you know, and there's no point. I mean, I would never be able to pull off trying to be like cooler and more together than I really am, you know. So you just gotta do the thing. But we gotta give it up to Sarah and can we mention the guy who hooked us up with Mandy Moore?
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Mike Thrasher, Sarah, Mike Thrasher via Sarah is the guy who hooked us up with Mandy Moore yesterday.
That was pure luck too. I met Mike millions of times and I saw him at Safeway randomly one day and he
really?
Said, "Hey,
you want to have Mandy Moore?
What do you guys think of Mandy Moore?"
And you know, did she not just smell of sweetness and light?
Man, you should read the article they have about her in the Portland Mercury. She has some kind of spell that she puts on people.
Well, it's like when she would speak, I would just hear like little wind chimes happening.
Love her.
It was absolute honey. It was wonderful. Yeah, yesterday was awesome. And
thank you, sir.
Yeah, right on, man.
Thank you. You spread the word. You call us anytime.
Every day.
Thank you, my friend. There you go. All right. Well, I have no time. People are asking what the Italian restaurant was. No, I don't have time to talk about it. We'll talk about the Italian restaurant later. And just that every time the guy would come by the table to do anything, fill up our water glass, my wife would just, like, I've never seen a woman really swoon before, but he would come by and he would turn on this, what I believe to be a fake accent, come by and, why, hello, mon cheri, or whatever it is that Italian guys say to women. And it's like she would just do everything but bat her eyelashes at him. It was really, it was fantastic. It really was. Final call, then we got a break. We'll come back with Lisa Goddard. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I missed your Mandy Moore interview yesterday. Did you ask her about Wilmer Valderrama?
We decided to avoid any of the apparently hundreds of traumatic breakups that she's had over the last year or so.
I don't think she likes that question very well. Hey, I've got a little tidbit for each one of you. Rick, one of the things that I hope your wife has on your list of things to do in London, actually, too, you have got to go to the Tower.
What is the Tower?
The Tower of London. The Tower of London.
I guess I could have put that together since I'm going to be in London. What is the Tower of London? I know that makes me sound like an idiot, but what is it?
You know, the Tower of London basically is a place where they used to torture people. There's a...
Oh, I'm in.
You know, yeah, you got to go there. You got to go to the Tower of London and get the tour from the Bobby because it's worth it. I mean, it's the Beef Eater, not the Bobby, but the Beef Eater. And then the second thing is that Beatles walking tour. You got to do that. If she doesn't have those two things on your list, you've got to cross two big things off. Skip the British Museum. It's nothing.
All right.
You know, and take the tour and the Tower.
All right, so it's okay. Neither of those is on the list, so clearly I have to divorce her.
Yeah, you got some scratching off to do, buddy.
Excellent. All right.
Okay.
Thank you, my friend.
Sarah, quick one for you. Oh, are you ready for the soapbox derby?
I am. We're about I'd say 65% ready.
When is it?
It's Saturday.
Next Saturday.
25th. Can't wait to see you up there.
Thanks.
Scotty J, how are you doing on your smoking?
Excellent. Thank you for asking.
Have you stayed clean?
Yes, absolutely.
Seriously, sincerely.
Sincerely.
I believe him. I really do. I have to say this. My gut is that I think he's telling the truth.
Okay, you know about karma.
I feel healthier.
Have a great weekend, you guys.
Okay, now
I feel healthier.
How could you possibly feel? You may not be smoking, but how could you feel healthier? I mean, you really nearly killed yourself with that wine
giant
last Friday.
Truck and then go home and...
I know, and that'll be the last scientific experiment of that sort.
Can I just say this, and then we have to break?
We have got to break now.
You do sound sick today. I mean, you sound like you got a head full of concrete.
I have a head full of allergies.
Mm-hmm.
It's constant.
You're allergic to being sober.
And there's only one cure for that, Scotty. All right, we have to take a break. We'll come back after this. The Rick Emerson. Wonkette herself is pretty hot, although I don't think she works at the set anymore. I think she still owns it, but I think that there's actually somebody else who does the day-to-day running of the site. It's hot. It really is like a TMZ for politics nerds. All right, it's 503-733-2970, and you can tell that Jenna's the trashy one anyway, you know, which sort of makes her more alluring to me.
Oh, yeah, she's the bigger one, isn't she?
She's just more of her to love, Sarah. Who's the...
Well, because I remember one of them's really thin and the other one's, like, more normal looking.
Yes. No, it's... There's Barbara Bush, the lesser. Barbara Bush, the younger. And she is sort of the more slender one, you could say. She's the one who sort of looks like... Oh, I shouldn't even say this. This is just weird. You know who the younger Barbara Bush kind of looks like? The younger Barbara Bush, in a weird way, I'm looking at this sort of smaller photo of her. Well, now that's not even true. I don't even know. But they do kind of look very different from one another. But Jenna Bush is, yes, she is the one that is a little curvier. I think that's the polite way to say that. And she does kind of creepily look like her dad, which is sort of weird. But there's this photograph of her where, look, I don't know if I can't say that she's 3 months pregnant. Maybe she's just become fat only in the area where one normally carries a fetus. And then when the New York Times published the same photograph, it's all airbrushed. It's all cropped out. Stomach gone. All right. Let's
yeah, look. She's totally knocked up.
That's what I'm saying. And not married, by the way.
They did crop it.
Yeah. The New York Times told me it was like baby be gone. The New York Times, it was sort of like fetus away.
I wonder how Daddy Bush is going to spin that one.
All right. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. From the Hill, CNN radio correspondent and punditette. Lisa Goddard. Why, hello.
Well, hello to you.
Hey, have you seen this Jenna Bush photo? Don't lie, I know you have.
I have not seen it.
Oh, did you read Wonkette?
I do read Wonkette, and I was looking. I didn't read it today. I came in, there's a bunch of other stuff I had to take care of.
Wonkette is fantastic.
Wonkette is fantastic. It's true, and it is no longer the original Wonkette. It's a number of other Wonkettes. Anna Marie Cox, the original, now is one of the political editors for Time.
It's Jack Russell's Wonkette. So I'm looking at this here. So there, let's see. There are numerous, and the great thing about this site is they have done sort of a timeline of this photograph of Jenna Bush, which was taken, and I won't take up a lot of your time here because I know that you're better than this. I know you're above this, you're above trafficking in such tawdry nitwittery. There is this photograph that was taken at the Wald family compound in Kennebunkport, I'm sorry, the Wald family compound in Kennebunkport last weekend, and it is, let's see, it is, Barbara Bush, and then Jenna Bush right next to her. And Jenna Bush, as I said, it either is pregnant or has just developed this sort of bowling ball-esque bulge, normally where one would carry a baby inside one's body. And so then later, the New York Times published almost exactly the same photograph, same event, same place, same whatever, except that abdominal evidence, as they say, mysteriously just cropped right out of the picture. So... And because she is without the benefit of marriage, she is the evidence would indicate that she might be engaging in some sort of sin without the benefit of matrimonial blessing. And I know that the Bush family could not tolerate such a thing because they are people of God.
I question the timeline, right? I don't know. I question the timelines here because that was back in June, that photo. So, you know, that's 2 months ago. I think we'd know.
Well, has anybody seen her?
I'm sure someone has seen her. I'm sure she's been in the site somewhere.
I mean, has someone seen her other than like a family henchman whose job it is to keep her like in a walled compound now until the end of the pregnancy?
I can't verify that. So I don't know. I will let you continue. I cannot dispute what you're saying. I question it.
I'm just saying. I imagine that she might be spending some time recovering at a dacha in the countryside. No one's going to
feel bad if she has a giant tumor. That would be years of Catholic training. That's something
I
would say. I'm very frightened that I said that.
I have no response to that because I didn't really anticipate you referencing a giant tumor. Although I will say, one of the categories of news that we do find ourselves strangely attracted to on this program is people with really inexplicably large growths inside areas of their body. I mean, and I think Don and Mike would second us on that, that if you can find a woman who has an 800-pound tumor on the back of her ear that she didn't realize was there until just last Thursday, that is where comedy lies, Lisa Goddard.
Indeed, indeed.
All right. Well, so I'll let you know if we have any updates on that. Let me just touch on Dennis Hastert here real quickly. And I know we talked a lot about this yesterday. And I guess I meant to ask you this only because it's a thing I wonder about. To what extent do you suppose is this attributable to just the coming election cycle and the sense that It's sort of like that old cartoon that used to get faxed around where there was a blender and then inside the blender was a goldfish and the caption was, I just can't take the pressure, because it does sort of have that feel like as 2008 gets closer, you know, this whole weird rock tumbler of an election is just going to get cranked up beyond anybody's imagining. And it is just going to be just a convection oven of political stress. So to what extent do you suppose people feel that storm coming and they just decide this is a good time to duck out?
I'm sure that it's true. People realize this is going to be a stormy election. But I think folks like Dennis Hastert, who have weathered, I think, much tougher elections, for example, last year's was probably even more stressful because Republicans knew that they were in danger of losing the House. So the pressure was just sky high on the Republicans. And I think something people don't realize outside of Washington is it's a huge loss in power, and that's the source of most of the stress. But the truth is, Republicans, when you're talking to them coming into last November, every single one of them was starting to figure out that they were going to have to fire a lot of people who had worked for them for a long time because they had lost power, and so they don't get as much of a staff. So there was huge stress all over the Capitol, especially among Republicans, because of that. I don't think this election could be more stressful than that. You know, my theory, and a couple of my contacts have voiced this as well, but, you know, we don't know if this is why Hastert left, is that the new Republicans, John Boehner and those guys, feel like the only way they can reclaim the House is to really make a case that they are new leaders and that this isn't the same old Republicans, the Hasterts, the other guys that you didn't like, Deb Price, who is also leaving. They want to make it as much as possible look as though this is kind of a fresh face, a face of maybe even change. I'm not sure if that they'll be able to sell that completely, but they will try. And I think that this is a factor in that. And I think now is the time for these guys to get out so that it doesn't seem directly connected to next year's election, but there's no doubt in my mind that in some form it is.
Here's a question, and this is not I'm asking you this just to get from a repertorial standpoint your take on just sort of the zeitgeist. In other words, your take on the perception, which as you know paces reality.
Mm-hmm.
I remember back in the Republican Revolution, and even leading up to it, back in 92, 93, 94, that there was just this sense in the air that it was the Republicans' time. At least that's how I remember that era, that there was a sense that it was, it largely because of a backlash against Bill Clinton, there was this sense that the Republicans, they were ascendant. It just was their moment. The Democrats had their turn, and just the cultural pulse was turning and changing. Is there any sort of a sense in the air that has now reversed itself and it just the Republicans' time has just drawn to a close in terms of favor with the public? And if so, are the Republicans aware of that? And is that, I mean, are they really having to really dig in against that perception?
Absolutely, they have to dig in against that. I think that they realized that last year. That's when we saw the full effect. And now they're going to try and make the case that, hey, the Democrats are the ones that are playing the games now. The Democrats are the ones that are playing footsie with the lobbyists. Democrats will counter that and say, no, we've passed this anti-lobbyist legislation. Republicans will say, hey, it wasn't strong enough. The truth is, in a lot of these areas, the folks who have been around Capitol Hill, Democrats and Republicans, play the game the same way. They have different little monopoly figures that they walk around the board. And I don't mean this in a skeptic way, because in some ways I do think both Democrats and Republicans have very legitimate agendas that they do intend to try and bring forth. But in a lot of other ways, they are playing the same game, and it's just a matter of sort of who's holding the scepter as to who points to whom. And I think Republicans will try to make Democrats look like the old party, but there's just not been enough time. Democrats have only been in power a year. Congress is not popular. The Democrats are still more popular than Republicans, however, and Republicans still have to fight that. And Republicans may lose some seats because of these retirements, and they're going to have to deal with that. I think Republicans are hoping that Democrats put someone at the top of the presidential ticket that ends up with a ton of negatives and hurts the Democratic ticket. But I see that as a bit of a long shot right now. I think that Democrats are very energized, and even if Democrats don't all agree on their nominee, they pretty much all agree that they hate George Bush and they don't want Republicans to take Congress back. So it's going to be a tough climb for Republicans. They're going to try it, and they might be able to do it, but it's going to be very tough.
I mean, you can never really count those guys out. I mean,
they are so darn smart, and they are great campaigners. They know what they're doing.
Well, and what's the analogy I'm looking for? The Republicans really are, okay, this is the best that my caffeine-deprived brain can come up with. The Republicans really are like some sort of unholy political zombie army. Do you know what I mean? There really is. I mean, you put them down, and 30 seconds later, they are lurching unsteadily to their feet again, coming for your spinal fluid. There really is no defeat of the Republicans. There is only pushing them back.
The real problem they're having right now, because they are still great strategists, they've kept their ideology. Like, they still have this smaller government ideology that they need to really tap into to get the moderates, because that's something that I think a lot of middle America would agree with the Republicans on. But the fact is that they're having trouble raising money. Their base is not energized, and they're behind in terms of money, which is very strange for Republicans. They are seen as the ones that can bring the money to the table. Anything can change in the next few months. But so far, they're just having trouble getting people excited.
Just on that note, I know it's not really like I'm quoting, like the front page of the New York Times or anything, but the Sacramento Bee has this. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Rodham Clinton is expanding her lead in California. She holds a 49. Let's see, the New York senator held a commanding lead over the Democratic field, 49% support to 19% for Obama.
Wow.
A 30-point lead over Obama, at least according to this recent poll in California. So speaking of momentum,
I'll tell you, it's not over yet, though. Really, it might feel like it, but I'm not trying to root for anybody but Hillary. Like, I'm just saying that it is early, and even if Obama had that lead, I would say the same thing. It's early.
There's a final question, and somebody actually asked this, I think it was either yesterday, the day before. We had talked about Iran a little bit, and the classification of at least certain segments and sects within Iran as terrorist groups. And he asked a question that is interesting to me, and I don't ask this to be flip, but I really don't know what U.S. policy is on some of these things, because I know that, for example, we are very careful about using the G word, the genocide word, because then that means that we have to go in and clean house. If we designate somebody in Iran or a whole section of Iran as being a terrorist group, I mean, is it then a fait accompli that we have to go in there and do a little, and just do a route?
No. There's tons of terrorist groups that we really haven't attacked or combated. Groups that at least the U.S. designates as terrorist groups, like, for example, Hezbollah in Lebanon. And of course, the U.S. has helped Israel with plenty of weapons to go after Hezbollah, but the U.S. has not necessarily tackled Hezbollah head on. And in fact, it's a side story. The U.S. had purchased a bunch of land in southern Lebanon to build an embassy, and it turned out that Hezbollah took over that territory where the embassy was going to go. And even now, the State Department has been working out whether they're going to keep the land, still trying for someday, hoping to build on it. And I think ultimately the State Department is giving up that land now, realizing it's in Hezbollah control. But the answer is no. Essentially, when the State Department wants to take some kind of action, like freezing the assets or maybe imposing U.S. sanctions against a country, one of the things that would help them to do that is if that country or organization had been designated as a terrorist group or a terrorist state. So it's almost the reverse. Like, the first step is, in a way, designating this group as a terrorist group, and then after that, the U.S. can decide what steps it wants to take, and it will refer back to that designation, saying, oh, well, here's why we're doing that, because we have designated it.
Excellent. All right, as always, a pleasure. I was going to ask you a question about London, but, you know, we'll have to do it next week.
It's, oh, okay,
we're coming
great.
Up on the top of the hour. Next week, I will ask you about, I have an upcoming trip to London.
Oh, wow,
looking for advice on. All right, enjoy your weekend. We will talk to you soon. Lisa Goddard, thank you, sister.
See ya.
All right, always a pleasure. Lisa Goddard on the Hill, fantastic. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. Let's see, Scotty J is preparing the news, so I'll just sort of take some of these as they come in. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson radio program. Hello.
Hey, guys, it's Storm.
Hey, Storm Large. How are you, sister?
I'm good. How are you doing?
What's up?
Here is a completely random, weird thing that I heard today, and you, my friend, being kind of conspiracy-minded, might have some inkling of whether or not it's true.
All right.
I heard through a very strange series of people that there is going to be some kind of fake nuclear emergency tomorrow.
Heard
this?
Yeah, we talked about this, I think, a little bit yesterday, that and we were never able to pin down whether it was real or not. I had some city employees say that it was, but I never really saw anything about it, that the Homeland Security Department, and again, this is just what we were told, was going to be simulating a dirty bomb attack in Portland.
Okay.
That's what we heard, and again, I don't know that that's true, and it was just a simulation. But we heard that they were going to be simulating some sort of dirty bomb incident, like it's somewhere in Northwest or something like that. Because Tim was all upset that they weren't just doing it with a real one in St. John's, of course. So I'm unclear about that. We never really were able to get a definitive answer on it.
Yeah, and here's the... Well, I heard that, and I was like, oh, that's neat. I've heard that they were going to do that before. But then the person who was relaying this information to me said, yes, but sometimes the organization formerly known as FEMA when they plan things like this, there usually actually is some kind of event.
Oh, that's great.
Oh,
that's
man.
Wonderful. Yeah, maybe
yeah, so, but they say, oh, yeah, there were three things on September 11th, and then, oops, there was a plane that flew in and the blah, blah, and then there's a thing in London and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And so I don't know if anybody has any insight as to the validity of any of this.
Maybe I'll spend some time in Idaho this weekend. I don't know. We'll look into it.
That's true, because Aaron Geek in the City wrote me an email about how the last couple of times they've done tests like this,
There's been some horrible accident afterwards.
Not an accident. They say they're just doing a test to sort of get it into the psyche of people so there's no panic.
Oh, I see. So it's sort of like it's like swinging two bats in the warm-up circle.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
They know there's actually going to be some kind of thing occurring,
but they don't
want there to be mad panic. So they're just saying, oh, no, this is only a test.
Thanks for putting that in my head. Now I have something else to be stressed about this weekend. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Sorry, Rick.
Hey, and we are going to
we'll see you tomorrow night.
Yes.
Hopefully. I'm buying a bunch of bottled water right now.
Assuming that your body isn't a smoking cinder, we'll see you tomorrow at the Wonder Ballroom.
It could be quite a show.
And Storm, by the way, has armed us with a couple of pairs of tickets to give away for that as well. So we will be doing that.
Awesome. All right, you guys.
Thank you, sister.
Good luck. Talk to you soon.
There you go. Storm Large, ladies and gentlemen. God bless her. All right. Now we've just got, by the way, I got a great Storm email just now, an email about Storm. Let me read that. We'll do a couple of these calls, then we'll break. Come back with, hey, Scotty J, how's that news preparation coming?
We are ready to go, like, right now, so I can't wait.
Really?
No.
You're going to have to wait a few minutes.
Okay. Yeah, you're going to have to wait, Seth. Rick, Storm Large owes us an apology, says this email. Rick, arg! Exclamation point. Like every red-blooded straight American male, I fantasize near constantly about two hot women sharing deep, intimate experiences with each other. Of course, Storm qualifies as a hot woman, and I wish... He says, thank you. That's very white of you, sir. Storm, in case you're listening, you squeak under the wire, I guess, as a hot woman. He says, I was thrilled that she was on yesterday and was jaw-droppingly happy that Storm was actually about to describe her experience of engaging in intimacies with another woman. This was about to be the best show ever, Rick. And then it happened. She uttered these horrible words. You were right to dump the... By the way, Storm, and I won't repeat it, obviously, but Storm used an analogy to describe what it was like in her estimation to perform a certain sexual act on another woman. And we let him go for a couple seconds, and then I went, no, and I just hit the dump button. He says, Rick, you were right to dump these. If only I'd been listening on the radio instead of streaming. If only you could dump those words from my brain. Now, Rick, every time I think about two girls, bam, the phrase that Storm uttered and a feeling that I can only describe as creepy, icky, and altogether oogie comes into my head. It's a sad, cruel world, Rick, when I can't ever again fantasize about two women. That's a world I don't want to live in, Rick. That's a world I don't even want to know about. Storm has stolen from me one of life's great pleasures. Damn her. Now I must go wash my brain with soap and steel wool. Farewell, Rick. Farewell. Sorry, Jason, didn't mean to harsh your mellow there. All right, let's do these, then we'll break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, this is Alan, full-time listener.
Hey, hello, sir.
Hey, I was calling about the dirty bomb demonstration.
Here we go. All right, yes?
I work for one of the ambulance company in Portland, and we've known it for a couple months now that we were contacted, our higher-ups were, that it was going to be sometime in August or September, and that we would be going to be having extra ambulances staffed, and that at some point there would be pages going out to simulate that this attack had been done, and they want us to respond as if we normally would.
That's great.
To try to test us.
You know, it doesn't – so did they tell you this, or did word sort of leak to you? Because it doesn't really seem to defeat the purpose if you're told.
We were approached from FEMA and from Homeland Security to our supervisors that
–
they wouldn't tell us, of course, when. They just said it would be sometime end of the summer, beginning of the fall. And that once this occurred, they wanted to see how the response would go with between the ERs and the ambulance and fire response with police.
Oh, that's creepy. I got this. Rick, this email says, Rick, my neighbor works for the Red Cross and is involved and confirmed this situation. Or a simulation, rather. Best show ever, sent Robbie. So, all right.
We're not sure if it's actually tomorrow, but it's supposed to be at some point. They said August or September.
That's great. Sleep well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. That's great. That's wonderful.
And it's supposed to be happening in downtown?
Let's see. This email says, Rick, the feds are planning a strange simulation of a dirty bomb attack in Northwest Portland. Again, by the way, we're just reading these emails.
This is purely speculative.
Purely speculative. Really, you know, and I know that it's speculative. A lot of people have said this, but I don't really, I haven't seen anything that says it's true. We ought to call the city and ask if it's true.
Well, I mean, are they allowed to tell us?
Well, why not? Well, clearly, like a dozen people have called about it.
Well, no, it's true, but everyone's kind of like, well, I know somebody who knows somebody, and it's fine, but
is
it something like that they will be able to?
Like you sworn to secrecy or something?
Yeah.
Well, this email, and again, this is merely speculation, merely a claim. This says, Rick, where they are planning to simulate a drill, a dirty bomb attack near the Mission Street Theater. So there you go. We'll do one more call, then we'll break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hello.
Hi.
Did I hear correctly yesterday that Storm Large is going to be in a production of Cabaret?
Yes, she is, starting
Fantastic.
In mid to late September, I think. I forget the actual date, but yes, she is going to be in Cabaret right here in Portland, Oregon.
Now, what's the theater?
It's at Portland Center Stage, I believe.
Oh, she's going to be at Portland Center Stage, because I heard that. I thought, well, because the role calls for a ballsy bitch, and she's just
done
perfect.
And done. Yeah,
done.
I can't swear to that, but I'm pretty sure it's at the larger, because there's two sort of venues inside that building, but I believe it's at Portland Center Stage. I do believe that's where it's happening.
Yeah, a ballsy bitch with a big booming voice.
Yes.
She's just going to be fantastic. Okay, definitely I'll catch it.
Excellent. Thank you, Kit.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Ladies love Cool Storm. All right. Now we're just going to
think of a dirty bomb. Portland hosts drill August 20th to 24th.
Buy tickets now. Wristbands available through Ticketmaster outlets. Now we're just getting nothing but calls about dirty bomb. Simulation. Can't say that enough. Simulation. We should probably break here. We'll break. We'll come back with your... If you're on hold, hang tight. We'll come back with your phone calls. Scotty J returns around the corner with the AM 970 Noon News Hour later on. Ed McCarthy, Jim Roop, Scott Daly, Top 5, Kissology Volume 2, and you help plan Rick Emerson's life. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. We'll get a couple calls here, and then Scotty J, you're moments away from the news. How are you feeling about it?
It's going to be great.
Scale of 1 to 10. Where's your resolve?
7.
Excellent. Let's get these two calls. Wait, is there somebody at the city we can call about this? Don't say Dan Saltzman.
I almost did. It just was rolling off my
tongue. Is there somebody at the city we can call to find out if they're doing this?
Why could we not call Dan Saltzman?
Yeah, well, he should know.
I guess we could.
He's our city man.
That's true. He's our man. He's our man downtown. Eric, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, I'm out here in the St. John's of west part of Portland.
which is
Forest
where?
Grove.
Oh, yeah,
Forest
totally.
Grove.
Yeah.
But anyways, I just want to say how much safer I feel after, 6 years since 9/11 that now they're going to check to see how prepared Portland is.
Yes, no. Johnny on the spot is what they are. Yeah.
And, hey, maybe play the Tom Waits version of that, I Don't Want to Grow Up, maybe as another bumper.
That is a great, of course, we just played the Ramones version into the bump there. And I actually had never heard the Tom Waits version until I got that.
The original.
Yeah, until I got that Ramones album, and I listened to it, and I looked in the credits. It's like originally done by Tom Waits, which is pretty cool. So,
yep.
What album? Do you know what album's that is on by chance?
Actually, I think it might be just a bonus track on Beautiful Maladies.
Cool. Excellent. But thank you, my friend.
Rock and roll, man.
All right, there you go. One more, and then we'll talk to Scotty J. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, Rick.
Hey.
I was going to the Lloyd Center to pick up my copy of Edward Hopper's Nighthawks at the Diner with Elvis, Marilyn, and Marlon Brando.
This is already the best call of the day, yes?
With the actual street lights that light up.
Of course, that blink, too. Don't forget to have something blinking, and then maybe every so often, out of the painting itself, blares a really teeny MIDI version of Heartbreak Hotel.
Anyway, so I'm going to the stores that you talked about before.
Oh, yeah. I'm
it's
going there
closed.
Again this weekend. It's gone?
Yeah.
No! Come on!
The big one that used to be where the Toys R Us is.
I was totally going to go there and buy that Dale Earnhardt touch lamp and a Scarface poster.
But they're opening up something else. You want to guess what it is?
As Seen on TV.
What's that?
Is it the As Seen on TV store?
Is it a dollar store?
What goes into every empty spot in a mall come fall?
A holiday store.
Yeah.
I love holiday stores.
Halloween costume store.
Oh, that's badass. Well, I'm sad that that place is gone. I wish I had just loaded up on tacky merchandise while it was open.
Yeah.
That is really too bad. Can I just tell you this, though? I really, and I mean this honestly, I am a sucker for holiday stores.
It's going to be one, so.
Excellent. All right. Thank you for the heads up, sir. I'll go there this weekend.
All right. Bye.
Fantastic. I love holiday stores. You know what else I love? Call me stupid. Call me whatever you want. That what is that store called? Illuminations? Is that what that store is called at the mall?
Which one?
It's like all. It's
they
called Illuminations.
Candles, right?
It's like a lot of candle type stuff, but it's a seasonal decorative store. And it's like they do like every September, October. It's like nothing but Halloween stuff.
That's where that other store that you were talking about. I've always seen the costume stores there. I don't know the Illuminations.
Illuminations is, Scotty kind of knows what it is.
Well, we're on the email list, so it's constantly hitting my email.
It's a cool place. You'll have to go there one of these days. It's really only good to go there at Halloween and Christmas. The rest of the time, it's just too much. But it is, it's an indoor decorative store, and it's a little, it's Lloyd Center, so how upscale can it be? But it's like several hundred miles above Spencer's Gifts or someplace like that in terms of Halloween decor. It is sort of a tasteful decor for the budget-minded. But the shtick is that everything is, they have a bunch of candle stuff. That's why it's called Illumination. That's the sort of gimmick of the store. But it's, we bought a bunch of our Halloween stuff there, which is like a little, we bought this little cast iron house with purple windows, and then you like it lights up inside with candles. It's just badass looking. It really is. It really is very cool.
So do you totally
decorate
the house?
You get the idea that that's for Halloween. Yeah. I go all out for Halloween. You do get that Illumination store is great because you get the idea that's where Tim Burton shops. You know what I mean? His entire home is decorated from that place, and it's totally at our house the single biggest holiday of the year except for Christmas. Those are the only two holidays we really celebrate.
Now,
in my
do you
home.
Decorate heavily for Christmas?
Absolutely,
as well?
Dude. I decorate for Christmas the day after Halloween.
Wow,
like November 2nd. I am, and we've got like every year more. Right now, we've got about 4 boxes in the basement of Christmas stuff. I gotta hold this. I am gay for Christmas.
How come you decorate your house so much when you never have anybody over?
It's for me.
He wants the neighbors driving down the street.
No, it's in the, I'm not. I'm unashamed. I decorate the house for me because I dig Christmas. I'm completely unembarrassed of that. I am into Christmas and Halloween. On Halloween, we do have, like, you know, no one really trick-or-treats in our neighborhood because I think they're afraid to go outside.
You don't really go outside after dark.
No, but I mean, but for Christmas and Halloween, I absolutely decorate the house, like, to the nines, simply because I spend a lot of time at home, and I dig Christmas, and so, you know, I want it to be Christmassy. And so that made me, you know, maybe some retarded, but it doesn't matter. I start decorating for Halloween, like, the beginning of October. I decorate for Christmas the beginning of November, and I leave up till the end of January. That Martha Stewart Christmas tree goes up November 1st, and it stays there till the beginning of February. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, shall we roll this and then that, Sarah? Ladies and gentlemen,
Daddy J.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Please, I kiss you on the mouth. Please let me...
Good morning, Metolia.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Scotty J filling in for Tim Riley today on the Rick Emerson Show. Well, in reference to our Westside St. John's listener who just called in, Elvis Presley is still generating big bucks. And that's even more true this week after yesterday marked his death.
What is this in reference to?
Death. Elvis is still generating big bucks.
Why did you refer to the guy from St. John's? What do you mean?
He was talking about Elvis, I believe, on that last call. Is that correct?
He's talking about a dirty bomb going off by the Mission Theater. I can see how you'd make the mistake.
One of your callers called in just a minute ago and talked about Elvis, so I assumed it was him.
You're off to a flying start today. This news hour is going to zip by.
Hopefully.
I can tell. I can feel it.
Well, fans from all over the globe, Europe, Asia, Australia, South America... even exotic locales like Kansas, for instance, spent their hard-earned money on T-shirts, mugs, salt and pepper shakers, refrigerator magnets, and all kinds of Elvis trinkets over this last week. The more lucrative earnings are in Memphis, though. Last year, Graceland took in $27 million in revenue, and the overall Elvis business brings in $40 million a year.
That's all about Priscilla Presley, by the way. There's a great book called Elvis Incorporated, which is about the sort of rise, fall, and rebirth of the Elvis Empire. It's hard to imagine this, but, I mean, that guy died in 1977, and like every celebrity, like every singer, every guy like this, when he died, he was just financially a shambles.
Right.
He didn't have a Scotty J looking after his finances, and so he had nothing. I mean, the guy was just bereft. It was almost bankrupt. And I think by, like, I don't know, 1984, 1985, I mean, it's like he was just bringing in a pittance. I mean, his estate was making really no money. I mean, especially for Elvis, for a guy of that stature. Priscilla Presley, who apparently is just a ball buster, took over, and I guess she is just hard as nails in terms of business. I mean, she really is sort of the Sharon Osbourne of the Elvis world, and that has really revived his imp. But that's why he's routinely now, every year, he's like in the top 10 earning celebrities, even though he's dead. So, I mean, it's all because of her. You really ought to read this book called Elvis Incorporated if you want to know more about Priscilla Presley.
Sounds like a great book. I'm wondering if she is a part of this CKX Inc. It is a New York-based company that controls Elvis.
No, it's not. No, I know this, actually. And see, for a guy, I'm not even really into Elvis. I don't care about Elvis's music. I don't care about Elvis's movies.
I'd like to go see Graceland.
I know,
that'd be awesome.
But that's the thing. See, I would like to see Graceland because I recognize Elvis's place in pop culture. There's all kinds of stuff that I don't really care about in terms of what the person actually did for a job, but I'm away. It's like, you know, Sarah and I were talking about Kiss yesterday. Sarah's not a Kiss fan. I mean, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, you've been to see Kiss. You've had the experience.
I like Kiss. I don't sit at home and listen to it.
Yeah, I mean,
I've never seen Kiss, so I would love that.
Oh,
that would just be so awesome.
But everybody is sort of aware of Kiss as an experience and as a big part of American history. I mean, I'm familiar with Elvis songs because my dad played Elvis records and I was a DJ. And, you know, you can't live in America and not know a bunch of Elvis songs. But I don't really like Elvis's music, and he was, you know, and his movies were largely terrible. But he's, I recognize his huge importance. I recognize the fact that he is, you know, he's an irreducible piece of American history. So I will totally go to Graceland at some point, just to see it, just for the whole experience. Same reason you two did it, you know what I mean? Just for the experience. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. CK, that organization, though, that is not Elvis. That is Priscilla actually sold a big chunk of the Elvis empire to that group. They actually have a controlling interest in part of the Priscilla estate.
So they probably pay her as a shareholder,
yeah.
And she
yeah, they,
just has a say with
they
this
have
and
like
that,
a 30% stake, I think, in the Elvis Presley, in EPE, Elvis Presley Enterprises.
Interesting.
Yes.
Well, there's all kinds of news today, but here's some especially good news. In New York, the stocks soared today when the Federal Reserve did what Wall Street was clamoring for, and it cut its key discount rate a half percentage point. The central bank's step gave the market a boost after weeks of losses fueled by turmoil in the credit market. The Fed cut the discount rate from 5.75.
You understand anything that you're reading?
Absolutely.
Really? Honestly?
I'm very excited about this.
I'm not trying to be an ass. I mean, really, honestly, does this all make sense to you?
Oh, totally. People are...
What is a discount rate?
Well, when it comes to that kind of stuff, I'm not a...
So, no. So
no,
the,
no, no.
So
I
the
mean,
answer
I understand.
To that is no.
Okay. Moving right along.
Let me see the story.
It's going from 5.75 to 6.25, by the way.
The
so that's it. I mean, from 6.25 to 5.75, which is
because we've
good
gone
thing
from
us.
You understand it to you don't. So, okay, stocks soared Friday when the Federal Reserve.
Yes.
The Federal Reserve is what?
They're the Bank of America, basically. They're
I
the
think Bank
who,
of America is the Bank of America.
the Federal Reserve is where our money comes from.
Let me ask you this: is the Federal Reserve a government agency?
Yes, it is.
No, they are not.
I thought they were.
Did what Wall Street was clamoring for.
What do I know?
Cut its key discount rate. What is a key discount rate? Uh-huh.
That is the rate that the banks get, right?
I don't really know. From the Federal Reserve. I don't know. The Federal Reserve part exhausted my brain. The Dow Jones Industrials are up more than 150 points. What are the Dow Jones Industrials, Scotty?
It's like the stock market. I mean,
that's a loop around.
Are you bluffing?
Sort of.
Okay.
All right, moving
there you
right
go.
Along.
Financial advice from Scotty J, ladies and gentlemen. Let's take a few calls here as we progress to the news hour with Scotty J and for Tim Riley, who is under the weather today. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello. Hello. Hi.
Do we have crickets?
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello. Thanks.
We also have a donkey sounder.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Today,
please,
remember?
For the love of God, hello.
Yes, I want to let you know what the discount rate is.
Thank you. What is it, sir?
It is the interest rate that banks charge each other to loan money to each other.
Yeah,
see, that's what I was saying.
Stop now. All right. Excellent. So that is what banks charge each other to trade money between them.
Correct. And
excellent.
So by loosening it, what it does is it frees up some... The money supply. Basically.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, sir.
You bet.
All right. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
The Federal Reserve, I'm not completely boned up on it, but I read this
boned up.
Article.
Nor am I.
Is the way our American money is actually owned by a few private individual families. And it
Trump.
Makes it sound like it's government-owned and government-controlled, but it's not. And it's just really interesting to note that these people took control of our monetary system like 100 years ago. And they lend the money back to the government and collect interest on basically nothing.
When you talk about the Federal Reserve, there are, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but there, in talking about, boy, I can't even believe we're doing this, Scott. It is not your fault. We're talking about the Federal Reserve. I've suddenly become the Michael Savage program.
Yeah.
It is interesting because too much talk about the Federal Reserve, and you do get the tinfoil hat brigade.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
start calling up, they're like, Rick, the gold fringe flag that hangs in the courtroom is not the, that is actually the sign of treason in the whole. But there is a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island, which you can read, which actually does talk about the Federal Reserve and the creation of it and how it operates, and really, I'm feeling sleep form in the corners of my eyes as I'm talking here. So, all right, excellent. Thank you for the clarification, sir. All right, I have no way of screening. I have no way of screening these, so God knows these might all be Federal Reserve calls. So, what we're going to do is we're going to do another story and see how many of these calls are left after this story. Hi, Scotty, go ahead.
Well, a couple of these stories are star-centric, I guess. So we're going to lean that way for a few minutes. Uncle Cracker. A former disc jockey for Kid Rock was arrested today on second-degree sex offense. The 26-year-old woman alleged that a man had committed sexual act against her at the S Lounge in a downtown nightclub in Raleigh, North Carolina. Cracker, 33, was arrested at a hotel in a suburban city the city of Cary, I guess, and is held on bail of $5
million. $5 million? Well, first of all, well, I don't know anything. Is there no detail about this?
Well, the only detail we have right now, the police obtained a warrant charging Cracker with second-degree forcible sex offense.
In a
crime.
Club, though, is that's weird.
That is kind of weird.
I mean, the idea that I'm not saying he didn't do it, but I mean, who right? knows? I mean, I don't know, but I mean, the idea that there would be some sort of public sex offense like that is sort of strange. That's what they nailed Tupac for. Back in New York, was that he supposedly was like forcing himself on some woman in the middle of a dance.
Look where it got him.
Yes, you tell him, Scotty. Boy, Uncle Cracker, you know, I liked that guy when he was a Kid Rock, but boy, what a big mouth-breathing hick that guy is. You can just tell, you know what I mean? You can just smell the authentic redneck all over that guy. All right.
Well, Uncle Cracker sang such tunes as When the Sun Goes Down, Follow Me, and Drift Away.
Why are you doing that?
That's kind of how he talks.
You know who Uncle Cracker? You know who Uncle Cracker always reminded me of was that guy Hurricane. That's the engineer over at Intercom.
Mm-hmm.
Hurricane and Uncle Cracker always seemed like they were like long lost twin brothers or something. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Excuse me for a moment while I ask, why is his name Uncle Cracker? What is that name?
I'm not his biographer. I don't really know. Hi, I think it's because he's a white man. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, I hate to break the streak and actually answer you when you say hello, but hi.
Hi.
Hey, you know, you make a lot of recommendations for really wonderful books, and I was wondering if maybe on your website you could have like a little corner, sort of like the What Rick Is Thinking.
Rick Emerson's Book Club.
What Rick Is Reading.
Hey, that's a great idea. I think it's an awesome idea.
So we can have the...
We should have Scotty J. talk to us about books.
Scotty,
I don't read.
Hold on, let's ask...
I know nothing
who
about books.
Who said that?
I can barely get through this news, let alone...
Who says, I don't read?
I don't. I look at the newspaper pictures.
He reads the funnies.
Yes. I don't even do that anymore. It hurts.
What is the last book you read, sir?
Moon, the biography of Keith Moon.
Oh, excellent. How was it?
That was a terrific book because it gave a lot of insight not only into Keith Moon and The Who, but also into sort of that whole time and kind of let you know what an awesome drummer Keith Moon was and what a crap-ass drummer that Ringo Starr was, and that was why Ringo Starr's son was taught by Keith Moon. But
I'm not even going to get myself involved in this discussion. This is one of those arguments that's going to end in blood. Somebody's going to be dead on a barroom floor, so I'm going to recuse myself. But yeah, but he was a character. I will give you that, sir.
Yeah. I love reading those books, but sort of about that whole era of the '60s when it was sort of changing from the really overproduced pop of the early '60s to the rock and roll of the late '60s. That
right.
whole changeover here. It was fascinating.
Excellent. Well, we may do that. We were talking about Youth and Revolt a lot this week, and there's somebody called up yesterday because I had made reference to this book I read, and my wife pointed out that I should wait until next week to talk about it because I don't want to be deluging people with book recommendations. I read this book, which I'll talk about more next week, that was really, really dark and disturbing and wonderful. It really was a wonderful book, but just very harrowing. And a guy called up yesterday, and he's like, hey, can I guess? Was it a book called The Wasp Factory? And it wasn't.
Right.
I'd never heard of that, but I actually did go to Powell's last night, and I bought a copy of The Wasp Factory. And I got to tell you, I'm about 15 or 20 pages into it. Boy, is that one effed up book. It's just creepy beyond belief.
What book is this?
Called The Wasp Factory.
Oh, the one that everyone was talking about.
I won't give anything away because this is on the first page. But here's a sample sentence that has stuck with me from the first couple pages of The Wasp Factory.
Okay.
Sometimes I think we should get a cat. All I ever had was the head of one, but the seagulls took that away.
What? That's horrible.
That's like three pages in, and I'm reading it going, like, why am I reading this?
Oh,
did you buy it?
Yeah.
May I borrow it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be finished with it by Monday. It's a short book. I'll be finished by Monday.
That's like Requiem for a Dream, where you just want to cut your ears off.
Yeah, true. No, my wife wouldn't go see that movie with me again.
I've never seen that.
Requiem for a Dream. No, it's the same where you want to watch it and you just you want to put out your eyes after seeing that movie just so you could never see it again. I saw it and it's a masterpiece. Don't get me wrong, it is a masterpiece. It's the movie that made everybody want Aronofsky to do the new Batman film. But I saw it and I'm like, I gotta come see this again. And my wife's like, you're seeing it alone. I will never see this again. So, all right, thank you, sir.
That movie should be the drug education movie.
Oh, dude, you see Requiem for a Dream, you'll never take an aspirin again. All right, thank you.
Good day.
And I think it's the last movie Jennifer Connelly ever got nude in. Hi, I guess we're done with those. Hi, Scotty J, let's do one more and then we'll break it.
How long did you spend in Powell's, by the way?
I don't know. Well, it was really destination shopping, so only about 20 minutes.
Did you
that's not bad, actually.
No, I didn't. Court is still looking for his. Well, Court's still looking for his. And I'm reading this Wasp Factory book now. So I'm going to give Court a couple days to dig up his copy of Survivor before I buy it. It's funny that everybody who has it, though, it's like, lend it out. You know, everybody's like, I don't know. Somebody's got it. So, no, we went to Powell's, and I picked up the Wasp Factory, and then I picked up my own copy of this harrowing book that I had just read last week that somebody had lent me. But I'll be done with that probably by Monday, and I'll bring you that and the Copeland, because I suspect you'll need one to balance out the other. Scotty, what is the last book you read?
Well, I don't even know, because it's been like 3 years, but I am going to read a book next week. I just got one in the mail from Amazon.
What is that book, Scotty?
Trump, The Ultimate Apprentice. And I will report back to you on how great it is.
All right. Here's Scotty J.
We're going to have a sound on this one. Amy Winehouse has pulled the plug on her August concerts after being hospitalized last week for severe exhaustion.
I don't think there's sound on this. I think it's just the sound they indicate is just the song. I don't think we have actual sound. Now, there's no quote from her or anything. Scotty just pointed at me. What did I just say? There's no sound.
I wanted to hear it. Is it probably the rehab song? And then it is kind of funny. She sings about rehab, and she has severe exhaustion right now. The 23-year-old British soul singer was putting her touring comments on hold in order to address her health issues. There will be no further comment. Speaking of exhaustion, Tiger Woods will skip the first playoff event of the FedEx Cup. A setback for the PGA Tour officials promoted this as a new era in golf. And a reminder to the public that majors are what matter most. Woods is in the number one spot as the PGA Tour playoffs begin at Barclays next week. He was tired from back-to-back victories in the Bridgestone Invitational and the Firestone event.
Are you a golf fan?
I watch it sometimes.
Do you golf with other white men?
I do.
Yeah.
I golf with all kinds of races, Rick. Anyways, Tiger was suffering from exhaustion because he won the last Firestone Championship, apparently, in 100-degree heat for his 13th major.
Even if you did not know, can't you, I mean, and I think you mentioned before that you're a golfer, wouldn't you just know by looking at Scotty and talking to him? Couldn't you just immediately suss out that
he'd
be a golfer?
You know that he's buddies with Steve Peliquin.
Does Steve golf?
Of course Steve golfs. He looks like he golfs.
He does,
Does Steve golf and try in vain to pick up on young girls at the pro shop?
He doesn't golf as much as he used to, but yeah, he does.
No, of course not. Let's do these and then we'll break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, I have a high-concept topic for you.
Okay, sir.
Books and movies that you respect their quality and artistry, but you can never freely recommend to people because they would just look at you funny.
Such as? Give me an example, please.
Any film by Neil LaBute.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or books by James Ellroy.
Here's an interesting thing about Neil LaBute you're suggesting there. Neil LaBute, of course, the Mormon filmmaker behind such movies as In the Company of Men and Bash.
And Your Friends and Neighbors.
Which is another dark film. In the Company of Men was my wife and I's first date.
Oh, Jesus. Well, then you knew it was love if you survived that.
No, I told her, and I'm like, this is it. I'm like, if you make it through this movie with me, then it's all good times ahead. Like, this movie is a trial by fire. I'm like, this is the kind of movie you're going to see constantly if you're with me. So this is, and that movie itself is so horrifying. Have you seen In the Company of Men?
Yeah, but you're sitting there and you go, this is great, but there is no way I'll ever watch it again, and there's no way I could ever recommend this to anybody.
Here's just the thing. In the Company of Men is an indie...
I've never even heard of it.
It's an indie film that Neil LaBute made. It's got Aaron Eckhart in it, and the girl who was the campaign assistant to Kathy Bates in Primary Colors, blah, blah, blah. It's an indie film, real low budget. It is, it's a fascinating high concept. It's one of those things where I read the two-sentence description, and I'm like, I am totally seeing that.
What is it?
It is about two really embittered sort of white-collar guys.
Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah, Aaron Eckhart and his sort of sidekick. Two, like, sort of embittered kind of cubicle guys who are just all pissed off. One of them can't ever get a date. The other one is getting a really nasty divorce. They're all pissed off at women. They just hate women.
You told me about this one, and they make that girl fall. They have a contest to see if they can make her fall in love with him.
They find the Hulk, and I'm not giving anything away. This is just the setup. They make a bet, basically, and the whole concept is they decide just to exact revenge on behalf of the male gender, and so they decide to seek out the most vulnerable woman they can possibly find, and it turns out she's a deaf girl, and they decide to both date her for 6 months and just shower her with affection, and then both dump her on the same day to see if she will then kill herself. And I mean... It's just the darkest, most horrifying, and I got to tell you this, there's no violence, there is no sex, there is no nudity, and I think there is almost no profanity. In fact, I think technically, I think it's a PG film, or it could be. I mean, there is nothing in that film that a ratings board would bat an eye at, but I got to tell you, it is just one of the most traumatic things. And that movie was my wife and I's first date, and we walked out of there, and she's like, well, that was interesting, and I said, Yeah, it seemed like it was going to be really compelling, and I think we went and got nachos after that, and that was 10 years ago.
Well, you know, and just his, like I said, his movies are just so well crafted. Amazing, but and you can sit back there and just appreciate the guts
so
to make them. But.
I recommended that movie In the Company of Men to my friend Barb, who said that she finished it and went into the bathroom and had a violent bout of vomiting after watching that film.
Jesus.
So there you go. All right, thank you, sir. All right, it's 5 that thank you. There you go.
Please. Yeah, I have no desire to see that ever.
No, I mean, it's horrifying, and it just seemed like such a simple, great, dark examination of sort of the male-female interaction and the male psyche in the workplace. And it came out around the same time as there was a lot of those other really dark indie films. And it is gripping. I don't think I want to see it again because it's just very unsettling. But it's exactly what the guy was talking about, though. A really well-made, well-crafted film that you really can't recommend to anybody because it's just too much in a lot of ways.
Did I tell you about that movie I saw called Dot the I?
No.
Oh, my God. It's amazing. It is kind of one of those hard-to-watch movies at times because it has a... It's a movie, and you think it's about one thing, then it has, like, a memento-like twist almost, and you're like,
right.
Wait, this thing, and then it gets really... It's really horrible to watch for a while there, then it gets good, bad, good, bad. It's one of the best movies I've seen in a couple of years.
Excellent.
And it has the hot dude from Motorcycle Diaries. Have you ever seen
The guy who played Che?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's the main character in that, and it's very good.
You know, one of the guys at the 48-Hour Film Festival was recommending Dot the I to me this weekend, actually. So.
I actually have it right now, so you can borrow it. Mm-hmm.
I got to watch Battlestar Galactica this weekend.
Okay.
Fatboy and Cord are like tag teaming me about it. They're just like, you got to watch it! You know, they're
and I'm
going to
watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, yeah, on DVD?
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Back, Scotty just left. He went to go look for his Trump book. Go wait eagerly by the door for it. Back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We return to the noon news hour after this. You stay there. About right now. What mannequin that the woman has sex with?
It's this movie I saw named Pi. But she has like a... I don't know. My friend Trisha in college was really weird and she loved that movie. She would always make me watch it.
Pi.
It was called Pi, but Pi was a doll and it was like a boy doll.
Was he a living doll?
He wasn't a living doll. He was, I don't know, some kind of doll.
He was a sex doll that a woman had relations
with. He wasn't
with.
A sex doll. He wasn't intended to be a sex doll. She's kind of molested him. I swear.
You know it's okay, Sarah. Bragging on yourself. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. This email says, Rick, if you read just one book this year, then still win more than Scotty J. Scotty J is at the Ministry of Truth in for Tim Riley today.
Well, British singer Lily Allen's work visa issues continue. For the singer tells People.
What People?
I guess People in general, that the 22-year-old September U.S. concert dates will have to be postponed because of the visa reinstatement process proving lengthier than anticipated. Now, the good thing is she already played Portland, so we don't have to worry about that. Allen had her work visa taken away after being detained at Los Angeles International Airport August 5th for 5 hours due to her being arrested March 13th when Allen reportedly left a London nightclub with her boyfriend and punched a photographer.
Fantastic.
We did have some music there, but oh well. Two jetliners nearly collide in L.A. International Airport on Thursday. An FAA spokesperson, Ian Greger, says that a Boeing 737 had just landed around 1 o'clock p.m. and the pilot switched radio frequencies before receiving taxiing instructions from the initial air traffic controller.
So this pilot switched to a second controller, and the WestJet pilot made a statement to this controller that appeared to imply that he had clearance to cross
the runway. Oh, that's creepy.
And the second controller apparently assumed that the pilot did, in fact, have clearance to cross
runway
and instructed him to cross that runway.
A misunderstood hand signal, which is the planes. So the planes almost hit each other?
Apparently so.
Jesus.
What happened is changing the frequencies, it caused the Boeing jet to nearly cross in front of a departing Airbus A320, and the Airbus was on its takeoff roll, going about 150 miles an hour. Collision avoidance alarms went off in the tower, and the Boeing jet stopped just in time. However, the two planes may have only missed each other by about 50 feet or so. So I'd love to be on one of those planes.
So
that'd be great.
By the way, on this news story about the stocks jump on discount rate cut, Scotty has been, I think this is this for my benefit? He's written in huge letters, get out there and buy real estate. Do it today. How's your house sale going?
I love it.
Did you really write that on there?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. How's your
I'm going to single-handedly get the market going again Oregon.
No, but how is your...
Are you a real estate agent?
No, but I look like one on the radio.
Fantastic. That's wonderful, Scotty. So how is your house sale going?
Well, we've had about 4 people look at it in 7 weeks, which is pretty pathetic for right now.
So that market is really booming for you. It's really working out well.
That's why, giving a prod and a poke here and there.
Don't say that.
Get it going again.
Scotty wants to give everybody a prod and a poke here and there.
Your wallets out.
Now and again. All right, here's Scotty J.
Well, the Utah rescue operation for the 6 missing miners has suspended indefinitely. The underground rescue operation finding the 6 miners in the Candrell Canyon mine has ceased. And that's the word from Mine Safety and Health Administration's Richard Stickler, who says the decision was made after the deaths of 3 workers last night.
Yeah, so they're like the rescue workers, not even now the miners. It's the actual rescue workers who are getting killed now. Well, there's like 9 of them got into some action yesterday. 6 of them were injured, and I think 3 of them killed. Now, do we know? I guess Ed McCarthy will be joining us later on, and he'll be laying this out. But, I mean, do we know how it is that they came to be injured?
Well, let's hear what Richard has to say.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at the story, but Scotty just does this elongated,
I'm throwing it to you, Rick.
It really is like he is throwing me a bowling ball overhand. It's like the big, heavy, slow arm throw. All right.
And last night, the right rib exploded off of the coal pillar with tremendous force, removed it, knocked out all the ground support we had in place, and unfortunately, we had 9 miners right in that area.
Wait, so these were other miners going down to rescue the first batch of miners?
Yeah.
Maybe they ought to develop some new technology so the guys aren't having to dig out tunnels with a spoon under the ground, huh?
I know.
Maybe it's time that we figure out some different way to strip crap out of the Earth's inner core. Jesus. All right.
Well, Stickler says while the underground efforts stop, the above-ground drilling of boreholes will continue. So far, 3 holes have been completed, and a 4th is well underway, and it's hoped that the boreholes will pick up sounds from the 6 miners, but that has not happened yet.
Okay.
This comes from Washington, D.C. Perhaps we should ask Lisa about this. The statue of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that is going to be placed near the Jefferson Memorial on the National Mall is already mired in controversy even before it's built. According to the Washington Post, some African-American artists are upset that a Chinese sculptor was selected earlier this year to craft Dr. King's likeness out of granite. So far, the 53-year-old artist's clay model of the civil rights leader has drawn criticism because they say it doesn't look like Dr. King.
I don't believe there's sound on this.
Oh.
Your finger pointing was all for naught.
It does say that there is, but that's fine.
That's okay. It doesn't look like that. It looks like John Davis.
Okay. Moving right along.
This is flawless. This really is.
Republicans talk future unity at a state fair rally. Without the drama of inter-party squabbles, Illinois Republicans focused their attention on the next round of elections.
You're a proud Republican, aren't you, Scotty?
Why, yes, I am.
What does GOP stand for?
General something.
Good.
Grape.
Good God Almighty. I don't know.
If you had to guess.
General.
No. Guessing. If you had to guess, like, a different word than the one that was wrong 10 seconds ago.
Gubernum. I can't even say the word. I'm close. I know I am.
Hey, would you like some gubernatorial?
I know I'm close on this.
Okay.
Gubernatorial or something like that. Gubernatorial. Is that right?
What is it? One more time, please.
Gubernatorial or something. Latrine.
No,
I don't know.
No, you. But you. It seems like you had almost a fully formed word there. Give us that word one more time.
Gubernatory. I guess I'm close.
Okay.
Don't ask him to spell it.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to pull your thing. I'm going to ask him to define it. What does that mean?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I couldn't even define it. And I think that's what it's. I'm close with this Gubna thing, right? On the GOP?
Gubna.
Gubna?
Just spell the
Gubna. The language of Scotty J.
This is his own language. It's like a secret language that siblings teach each other. Give us, please, just the Gubna part of that. Just spell the Gubna part.
Gubna.
Gubna.
Hello. Anyways, we have some sense.
I swear to God, it's like I'm trapped in an episode of The Office sometimes.
It really is.
Okay, where am I?
I don't really know. Where are you, Admiral Stockdale? What is the name of the cut?
The name of the cut is Cross One.
Cross One, I've got that. Okay, would you please give the lead-up sentence again?
House Republican Leader Tom Cross says Democrats have given the GOP... which I don't really know anymore. I used to know what that meant. A map on how not to do things.
And it's all based on the Democrats. They run everything, and they want everyone to know that. And so you got to produce, and they've been unable to produce. And I think that's a sorry state.
The GOP's first straw poll helped boost the crowd and bring out a lot of voters and volunteers.
Excellent. All right, fantastic. Gubna.
Gubna.
All right, fantastic.
Well, let's move on to some fun stuff. How about a cannibal watch?
Hey, how about a cannibal watch? Here's your Cannibal Watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
A man is eaten at a wedding. Four relatives killed and ate a cousin at a wedding reception.
Four weddings and an entree. I'm sorry. It seems that was the best I could do. I was working under pressure here.
I believe that deserves a want.
No, I don't. No, I don't think so.
You don't want yourself. Okay, let's start over.
Weekends only.
They served cooked leftovers to the party guests. The victim, Benji Gane, had angered his attackers.
Really? That's hard to believe.
He made them very angry. His attackers were angered because he accidentally... Well, let's see where we're at here. He accidentally touched the bride's bottom, apparently. Her father, brother, and another cousin and a nephew stabbed Gane in the Philippines. They roasted his body.
That's gotta hurt. Where was he stabbed? Right in the Philippines.
They didn't roast
it. It's just a badly written story. I don't think it's all Scotty's fault. I don't think. Where is this from? Is it from a tabloid?
The Philippines.
No, what is the source of the news?
The Sun.
Oh, well, there you go. That explains it. Well, it's written all British.
They probably made this up anyway.
Stabbed in the Philippines.
They roasted his body, scoffed some of it. So it is. That's a British word, right? And served the rest to unwitting guests. They didn't know what they were eating, said the officer, because they were so drunk. All four have been held on murder. That's it for the Cannibal Watch.
Like you wrap it up all definitively there. And that's it. Done. Lord. Have a big dinner, have a light snack. If you don't like it, you can't send it back. Just eat it.
Right, the movie I was talking about, remember I was saying with the weird doll?
Yeah.
It wasn't Pie, it was Pin.
Pin.
It is the worst movie.
No.
It's about this, it's this this anatomically correct doll. And this these two kids live in this house, and their parents, like their dad's a doctor or something, wants them to learn about the human body. So he lives with this doll, and the parents are killed in a car crash, so they're living with this human doll.
It's like a Flowers in the Attic thing, but with a mannequin.
I guess so. I've never seen Flowers in the Attic.
No, you shouldn't, but you should read the book.
Okay. Yeah, it's a very wrong movie.
Yeah.
And the doll's name is Pin.
Pin. Fantastic.
And we'd watch it over and over again in college. It is hilarious.
Okay, now is it...
And creepy. It's a creepy doll movie.
And I was going to say, is it meant to be hilarious or is it meant to be creepy and then it becomes hilarious?
It's just wrong. I mean, because they treat this doll as if it's human. I think I remember doll sex and...
Doll sex. Is it creepier than Boxing Helena?
I haven't seen that.
What? Oh, come on. Well, you're not a guy. That would explain part of that. It was by Kelly Lynch, who was David Lynch's daughter.
I've heard you talk about it for years.
No, it's the hottest movie.
Why? Because he cuts off all her limbs and sticks her in a box and shoves her under his bed?
You're boiling it down to make me sound weird. No, it really, there are... Okay, there's no way to say this without sounding bizarre.
You've passed that.
There are some really hot sex scenes in the movie. I saw it when I was like 15. What do you want from my life? I was a teenager when it came out. Not with the stubby woman, though. They're not with her. I should quit talking about this now. There's no way to... I'm just saying, guys out there, if you've seen Boxing Helena, you know what I'm talking about. Because...
Please don't describe it. You're already sounding like a freak.
It's not with the stumpy girl. It's not sex with her.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not stump sex. Stump humping.
Stumping.
Stumping.
I get knocked down. Oh, sorry.
What are you doing over
there? Well, the name of that song is Tub Thumping, so Stump Thumping.
Stump.
Sorry.
God, we're all bad
stump
people.
Thumping.
Stump Thumping.
No, anyway, he does cut off her arms and legs and keeps her in a box under his bed, which, again, seems really weird until you consider that it did sort of come from the family of David Lynch, in which case it really ranks as one of the least weird things that the Lynch family has ever been involved with.
That's true.
But there are, it's this weird, have you ever seen the movie Breaking the Waves, the Lars von Trier film? There's a movie called Breaking the Waves, and this is nowhere near in the same league as Breaking the Waves. Everybody's seen that. He's the guy who made Dancer in the Dark. So the guy keeps the stumpy woman in a box under his bed, and then, if I remember correctly, he never actually has sex with her, though. He never has relations with her. He instead brings home prostitutes and has sex with prostitutes while she watches. It's all really weird.
Wait, she watches in the box?
No, I think he props her up on a pillow or something. And I think she watches him have sex with prostitutes. Some guy and then a woman. I don't think it was anybody known. Or was it Sherilyn Fenn? No, she was in Twin Peaks, right?
Yeah, she was in Twin Peaks.
Now I don't even know.
That was Audrey Horne.
Boxing Helena now. But the hookers that he has sex with are really hot. You get the idea that it really was just like a Skinamax late-night exploitation film, but that because it had the Lynch family name on it, everybody's like, it's a surrealist masterwork. And it's really not. It really is just an excuse for a bunch of...
No, the Lynches are totally messed up. I told you Laura Palmer's Diary is basically...
Yeah.
It's porn.
Yeah, so, and lots of the Twin
and
Peaks,
and it's
you know.
Very descriptive, very... Very not a high school girl, you would think that she'd be writing that stuff.
A surgeon becomes obsessed with a seductive woman he once had an affair with. Refusing to accept the fact that she has moved on, he amputates her limbs and holds her captive in his mansion. Sherilyn Fenn. And I forgot all about this. Bill Paxton. Not Bill Pullman. Bill Paxton. Julian Sands. Sherilyn Fenn. Bill Paxton. Art Garfunkel. I haven't seen this movie in forever. I have to go back and watch it again.
Now, have either of you been
watching... I forgot
that
Art Garfunkel was in this movie. It's been too long since I've seen this. I got to go back and watch it again. When did it come out? 1993. So I saw it in, like, 95. I would have been about 20, maybe. So I guess I wasn't a teenager. I guess I was in my early 20s. But, I mean, it really just is the sleaziest film. It really is like just some late night, again, just softcore porn on Showtime or something, but then with the limb chopping. I don't even know what we're doing anymore. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Without Tim, Tim is the moral compass of this program. Without him, it all just goes down the toilet. What's up?
Absolutely, I agree. Hey, GOP, Grand Old Party, that's from pre-Civil War days when the Republican Party was founded.
Yeah.
By Mr. Lincoln and his friends.
Scotty, are you making note of this? GOP stands for Grand Old Party.
And gubernatorial denotes a race for a governorship.
Scotty?
See? I knew my goob does.
Yeah, you're total goob. But we love you, Scotty J. Whatever change.
Thank you, sir. All right, there you go.
We do have some breaking news.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
I'm sorry, I'm still laughing at it. I'm surprised you haven't seen the movie Pi, Rick.
Pi? No, I have seen Pi.
I was talking about Pin.
Confusing two movies. Pi is the movie that Darren Aronofsky did before Requiem for a Dream, which is creepy and great.
Oh, it is so great. You know, seriously, that movie in my movie collection is like Youth and Revolt is in your book collection.
It'll mess you up. Pi is a creepy, creepy film. It really is. I don't like it as much as Requiem for a Dream, but it is great.
You know, Pi is, ever since I saw it, like, I don't know, like 10 years ago or something, like, that is absolutely, without a doubt, one of the best movies ever made, period. I highly recommend it to everybody. You know, and I didn't really find it that disturbing. I mean, my heart really went out for the guy, you know, and you really feel his pain and trying to deal with his head trauma it's a great, great book movie. And also that East Indian chick with the British accent.
Pi is about a guy, a sort of idiot savant type. He's a sort of a mathematician, an amateur mathematician, and he is obsessed with numbers, and he believes it's sort of an advanced case of some of like the guys in Clyde's inner circle. He believes that numbers and patterns exist in all of nature, and then it's tied into sort of a sort of Jewish mathematician cabal and everything, and it's a really bizarre film, black and white, very surreal, very haunting, very gripping, and it's a portrait of a guy really in the midst of a brilliant guy in the midst
of it a work of fiction?
Mental breakdown, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, technically it is fiction, but I will say, like, I mean, throughout, like, the Kabbalah and the math and all that, it also has a very strong Albert Einstein connection with, because he's really kind of looking for, like, a grand unifying theory for existence and reality, And when he finds the patterns it was just awesome.
Yeah,
for a math guy, I geeked out hard.
It is he's a brilliant math guy who just is having a nervous breakdown, and he just begins to see patterns and math everywhere in the world, and it's like being inside someone's head who is just slowly becoming a schizophrenic paranoid. I mean, it really is great, but it's haunting. It is. All right.
Yeah. All right, man. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, sir.
I'm going to go purchase that at CD Baby Exchange.
It's disturbing.
How is it disturbing?
It's just because it's black and white, shot in a very sort of jittery fashion. And again, it's bleak. It's just a bleak film. It really is very well made. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to dissuade you from it. It is very bleak.
I think I want to buy Pin.
Pin is great. You do have to.
Pin isn't great. I just said Pin.
No, Pin is the humping the mannequin. How can it not be great? You got to read Flowers in the Attic one of these days, too. As an American girl, look, I'm an American man, and I read Flowers in the Attic. How is it that you never read Flowers in the Attic in high school? Don't all girls read that in high school? Isn't it right next to Jay's Journal and Go Ask Alice? I thought it was like a required reading.
I read those.
I thought Flowers in the Attic was a thing that ever. That's the only reason I ever read it. I read it as an adult, too, when I was like 23, just because it's one of those things that is so referenced so frequently. V.C. Andrews books, and especially Flowers in the Attic. I'm like, I wanted to know what people were talking about. I wanted to know my culture. And it's just great. It's so badly written. Flowers in the Attic is just hack work. But it's so, you can read it in like a day. It's like 400 pages long. You can read it in about 5 hours. And it's just, it's all that is great and terrible about fiction. Rick. Youth and Revolta is great. I bought it earlier this week on your advice. It is good, so I will not be punching you in the Philippines. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Let's do these calls, and then we'll do one more, and then we'll break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
I have to admit, boxing Helena is like watching a train wreck. You can't take your eyes off.
Okay, but let's talk about how hot the scene with the hooker is. Come on.
Oh, my God, yeah. It is. It is porn. Strictly porn.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Helena's in her box, and the door's open a crack, and she's watching the whole thing. And he's watching her watch him and stuff like that.
And the guy is really creepy. The guy, I mean, that goes without saying, but the guy who cuts off her arms and legs is really creepy.
Well, see, she gets hit by a car.
Oh, that's right, and then he brings her in and just never tells anybody.
And he brings her in, yeah.
Yeah, forgot
But originally, Kim Basinger was supposed to be Helena.
Really?
And she backed out of the project, and that's when she got sued, and she lost like $20 million because she backed out of the project. But Cheryl Finn took over. But, yeah, if anybody wants to watch a hot movie that you really feel bad about watching, but it's you got to watch it, it's Boxing Helena.
Yeah, no, you'll watch it, and especially if you're a guy, you'll watch it, and you'll love it, and then you'll just feel like a terrible person for doing so.
Well, and then watch Requiem for a Dream right after it, and, man, your brain is shot for the weekend.
Requiem for a Dream is just like taking sandpaper to your soul. It really
is.
Oh,
God, it is such a great movie.
Oh, it's brilliant. It is, I would say, almost without flaws. It may be flawless.
Total degradation of the human spirit.
But just see it on a strong day, as I always say.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Totally.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Yeah, it's way worse than this, but it's like when I saw Clock Watchers while I was unemployed. That'll make you want to kill yourself. Mm. Jesus. All right.
So now I'm obsessed with Pin.
Scotty just left.
A girl just wrote me who went to the Sarah Jessica Parker thing today and met her.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Eloise, she's going to be calling you.
Is she going to come on? All right, excellent.
Yeah.
All right, we should break here because we got Ed McCarthy coming up later on. Jim Roop will be joining us. Scott Daly, the top five, Kissology Volume 2. We got to give that away, and we'll talk about my upcoming trip to London a little bit. It's 503-733-2970. What are you? Wow, thank you. Back after this is the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. Stay there. I get no doubt.
That is not nice.
That's going to be our new catchphrase. Whoa!
Oh, I found a picture of Pin.
Hello there.
They put skin on them to make them look more real.
Oh, that's creepy. That's a phrase that can be taken out of context really easily. We put skin on them to make them look real. Hi there. Yeah, that Wasp Factory book is all kinds of messed up, by the way. It is sort of a criminally psychotic catcher in the rye so far. That's kind of the way I'm describing it. I won't say anything else about it until I finish it. All right. Hello there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. By the way, we'll talk to Ed McCarthy here in just a second. Then we'll talk to somebody who was apparently Sarah Jessica Parker. I guess that was today. I kind of forgot about it because I don't. No disrespect. I don't really care about Sarah Jessica Parker.
Maybe that's where Tim is because he wanted to meet her, too.
That's why he called in sick. I have a stomach ailment. But
no, she's hawking some perfume. He wouldn't have gone.
Well, there was a point I was going to make. Oh, but there is a documentary out called Guys and Dolls. Did I tell you about this?
No.
And it's a documentary made by the BBC, and they're the ones who can really only do stuff like this right, because if it was made in America, it would be too kooky, and it would be like that whole Ben Stiller Reality Bites thing where they would make the documentary look all stupid. But it's a very straightforward, completely serious documentary made by the BBC about a series of people who have ongoing adult, and I mean that in every sense of the word, adult relationships with those real dolls. And you know those real dolls, right?
Oh, yeah. No, you and I went to Fantasy Video, remember, when we saw one of those?
But the real doll, where's the whole doll made out of that?
It was a huge, like,
yeah, and it cost like
girl.
$10,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so creepy, man. Because the guys, some of them are weird, but some of them are really normal. One guy was like a decorated officer in the military or whatever, and he's a, you know, an attractive man. And he's like, well, I just never really hit it off with normal girls. And so, you know, Monica and I have been together for about 6 months now. And then they do the wide shot pullback, and it's like, Monica's just a plastic doll there. And they, you know, and it's not just like a sexual thing. It's like they have tea and they like watch television together, and it's all kinds of creepy. The best part, though, is the guy in the film who still lives with his dad. So the guy's like 21, 22, still lives with his dad. The dad, in his words, doesn't really understand the relationship that Charisse and I have, and so she has to live under the bed most of the time. And then the dad goes to work, and they show the guy pulling her out from under the bed and, like, putting her lipstick on every morning, and then they have breakfast together. It's all so unbelievable. And this is the phrase, and then we'll welcome Ed McCarthy, but this is the phrase. The documentary is called Guys and Dolls. The phrase that really creeps you out is when this guy is talking about Charisse, his life mate, who, again, is a doll. And he says, well, you know, like with most relationships, you know, when we were first together, so creepy.
Oh, my God.
He says, like with most relationships, when we were first together, we couldn't keep our hands off of each other. But now we just enjoy, you know, just being together. And we just enjoy the fact that we can wake up and look into each other's eyes. And then they cut to her, and she's like a freaking doll. I mean, it's so unnerving, but it's the BBC, so they treat it totally, like, straightforward. Like, they're playing it totally straight the entire way through. Like, it's a serious documentary.
And this one, the boy, the boy becomes friends with the doll, and then he's so lonely that he starts talking for the doll. So have these conversations where he's Pin and himself.
I love you, too!
That's exactly what they're like. What are you doing, Nick? I don't know.
Don't do that! Don't ever do that. Oh, God. Okay. In a moment, we're going to talk to Eloise and Fred.
We need to be more appropriate.
It's going to take a moment. Well, it's just, this Utah thing continues to be one round of bad news after another, but we can't pretend it's not happening. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Jesus, CNN Radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. Hi, Ed. I'm sorry to lead into you with such a...
Rick, I just was just thinking. I mean, it must be a little uncomfortable, you know, introducing him to the family, huh?
No, the great thing about it is, like, the dad is like some burly construction worker guy, and the kid is all artistic, and he has, like, you know, nail polish, and he's all, like, whatever. And he's just like, well, Dad doesn't understand what Charisse and I have, but, you know, really, what's important is that Charisse and I know, and when, you know, and sometimes just that special spark of being with your soulmate. And they keep cutting to her, and she's a piece of silicone. I mean, I'm not going to pass judgment, but I mean, God, it's just weird. It is fascinating. I really would strongly recommend that anybody that you watch it. It's called Guys and Dolls. It is a BBC documentary. It's on Google Video, actually. You can watch it for free on Google Video. It's like a 45-minute documentary. It is just so creepy and great and unnerving and weird. So, in any event, hey, just as a side note, before we talk about this horrible thing in Utah, is it true? Is Michael Vick gonna plead out on this? Is he going to cop a plea?
You know, we're waiting on this thing. They had this fictitious time deadline of 9 a.m. this morning Eastern time. And,
right.
You know, the whole thing is that the grand jury goes back on Monday, so he's probably, I'm thinking, has a whole, and the lawyers I've talked with, they say they agree, he's got a whole weekend to mull this thing over. And I'll tell you what, though, they're really ratcheting it up because one of the guy is talking about the execution-style killings of these dogs that he participated in. Another guy is saying, he bankrolled the operation and, you know, the gambling and all of that. Now, he's going to be really up a creek with the NFL on the gambling issue because that's a no-no. That could be a permanent disbarment from the NFL.
And that's the interesting thing is that of all of this horrific, just unforgivable, creepy stuff that was done to these animals, that the thing that's going to hang him probably, if it happens, is the fact that there was betting going on because that's the one thing. And again, for good or bad, that's the one thing the NFL just won't tolerate. I mean, you just can't be gambling. So.
Exactly. But, you know, the other thing that's going to hang him if he doesn't take this plea deal, and the lawyers now, they were kind of split for a while, and now apparently they're telling them, Michael, you better take this thing. You're talking about a year to 18 months in the pen. And if he doesn't take this, they're going to pull out the old RICO statute.
Ah.
And that means that he's going to be 20 years in prison.
Good for them. Excellent. Fantastic. Couldn't make me happier.
That's it. And so, you know, we're hoping that Joey Harrington comes alive here in Atlanta. You know what I mean?
I was going to say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be so lighthearted about it because I know that this has just completely put the final shank into any of your NFL hopes this year. So.
Oh, that's it. Well, I'm a Patriots fan, so, you know, I don't want to offend anybody, but. You know, we'll see what happens.
Good
but, I mean, I do have a passing interest in the Falcons, and we'll see.
So I don't – you'll have to fill in some of the blanks for me on this Utah thing. So is it these guys this horrible thing where these three guys were killed. These were not the initial batch of miners they were going to rescue. This is some horrible twist of fate where it is actually three of the rescuers killed,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it happened last night, and apparently it was, some kind of a little seismic activity type thing. They called it a bump. And what happens is all the stuff starts shooting out from the wall and killed three of the miners that were on the rescue team. Six others were injured. And apparently the five of them are doing pretty good. One's in not so good shape. That's what we're hearing right now. I just noticed Orrin Hatch was out at the scene I'm thinking, you know, you got there quick. It happened August 6th, and he's there now. So,
I mean, this mining company, I mean, and, you know, I'm not trying to place blame, but it does seem like there's just been one miscalculation after another. It's just this whole thing started. I mean, it just seems like and here's a dumb question. Somebody emailed me this, and I don't mean to sound flip about this, but here's an interesting question. When these guys are mining, I don't know anything about mining, but has anybody is there really just one big a hole that goes down into the ground? Has anybody said, well, why don't we just have two tunnels that go down to this place? So if one tunnel caves in, you got another one.
You got another one to come up. Yeah, I don't know how they set it up. I'm sure they all do it differently, and it's something that I sure wouldn't want to do. And I, you know, today there was one woman who was saying that, you know, talking about her father, and she said, you know, this is a mining community. She says this is all he's done. She says he wouldn't know how to do anything else, you know, except for mining.
Right. Well, I got to tell you,
I talked to Richard Rybrow, and I said, this kind of sounds like broadcasting.
Exactly. I will just tell you this. I lived in Utah for several years, and there are sections of Utah where, as you said, it is a mining. There's a town called Magna. And I don't know where, what is the town where this happened, this mining disaster?
This is in Huntington, Utah, central right. part of the state. And apparently they're saying now it's on a fault line where this mine is, and that's where they're getting all these, they've had 20 rumblings since, you know, these guys were trapped.
There are some communities in Utah that I'm familiar with, and again, this town called Magna is a perfect example, and Magna is owned essentially by Kennecott Copper, and it's one of those things that is sort of a vanishing phenomenon in America. It is the one company, one industry town.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And it's just this just sends such shockwaves through that community because everybody's livelihood is at the most 2 degrees away from that company. You know what I mean?
I wasn't making light of that, but I'm saying if you've been in the field for so long,
yeah.
You feel like you're locked in, and that's true.
There are a couple of these towns where the fortunes of the company are the fortunes of the town. It's just as you noted, the people who grew up there, they grew up in a mining family, and people can laugh at that, but it's true. And they don't know, you know. And when the town it goes under, or the company pulls up stakes, or there's a recession, or
a lot of times
now they get hit with EPA regulations that put them under. And man, you can drive through that town, and you can just fire a cannon down Main Street and not hit anybody.
Yeah, I know. So,
all right. Well, I guess.
So what they're doing is they're going in from the top still, and they're going to still try to see if they get any sign of life. I mean, they had what they called vibrations, and they weren't really sure if, you know, that was anything. They heard it for about 5 minutes, and then they didn't hear it again. So could be anything. Could be an animal under there. They just don't know at this
all
point.
All right. Well, I guess no such thing as good news. All we can do is kind of wait at the moment. My friend, to whatever extent possible, have a good weekend. I'm sure we will be talking to you about this in the future.
Talk to you next week, probably about the big hurricane next week, it looks like.
That's true, that as well. All right, my friend Ed McCarthy, CNN radio correspondent in Atlanta. Thank you, Ed. All right, it's 503-733-2970. In just a second, we'll talk to this woman who saw Sarah Jessica Parker today. Hi, Fred, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know there's a movie coming out with Ryan Gosling called Lars and the Real Girl.
And is it a comedy? Well, it would have to be. A comedy.
It looks pretty weird. It's about he's kind of a recluse, and he orders a real girl and treats her like a real person, takes her around town and brings her to church and all kinds of weird stuff.
It's just one of those things that is such a weird phenomenon because, again, those dolls, this is not like the, you know, the blow-up dolls that we all used to joke about when I was in high school that you were like $20 or, you know, whatever. I mean, a real doll is like between $5,000 and $10,000.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and they'll see these things like on Real Sex on HBO where it's like some couple where it's like the couple wants to have threesomes but they don't want another girl who's a real girl, and so they'll have the doll, and it's just, I mean, whatever anybody wants to do, it doesn't matter to me. It is just bizarre beyond words, though. Although I do have to say this, I mean, I will admit this honestly, that I would love to, because I think this is different than the thing Sarah and I saw at the adult store. I don't think it's the same thing. I would love to know, I know this sounds creepy, but really, honestly, what one feels like, what the material feels like, because apparently that's what the $10,000 is, that it's like some weird revolutionary whatever, and it's just, you got to wonder just what that sensation is like. It's just creepy and strange and weird and, I guess, kind of all-American in its own sort of way. You know, we are a nation of ingenuity.
Only in America.
That is actually absolutely true, sir. Thank you. That's Fred. There you go. All right. Was it on Howard's show? I don't know. It was on Howard's show, I think, that somebody actually, had relations with one of those, like, on the air. It's like a test drive or something. It might have been Howard who did it.
I'm sure.
All right. Is this Eloise?
I have music.
All right. Let's welcome now to the... Oh, I should have known. Hold on. We'll let this... Let's welcome now...
Hello.
from the Rick Emerson Legion of folks on the scene, having just seen Sarah Jessica Parker at Washington Square. Eloise, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm dandy. This was Washington Square, right?
That's correct.
All right, so Sarah Jessica Parker was where? She was at Macy's?
She's at Macy's in the perfume department.
Was it just nuts there?
It was just crazy. They have a band. They have people handing out chocolate. There's just, like, all the news stations were there. It was insane.
And this is because of her new fragrance. What is it called, Sarah?
It's called Covet.
Covet. Did you buy some?
No, I didn't buy any. They're giving out tons of free samples. They have a ton of girls dressed up in that dress that she's wearing with the blue tie and everything, and they're giving out free samples all over the mall.
And so did you smell the fragrance?
It is. I did. It's actually pretty nice. It's not that bad.
I think that was what they doused the flyer on when they gave us the flyer advertising.
Yes.
And I'm not really one to judge perfumes. I didn't really know what it was. So
tell us.
So what does she look like in person?
She's actually really cute in person. She's a lot cuter. She's a lot softer looking, not so, angular, I guess.
She's very pointy.
She does look very pointy.
Yeah, she didn't look so pointy. She was wearing a lot of makeup, but she was wearing this really cute sparkly blue dress, and she's very tiny, but she's, like, super cut, like, very, very buff, but very, very tiny.
Ooh, was she wearing cute shoes?
Yeah, I have nothing to contribute here, Sarah. This is all on you. I have nothing to ask.
Yeah, but it was really hard. You can't actually go meet her unless you pay $140 to get like this big huge gift pack.
Totally. That's like when you like a lot of those, like you go to a lot of record and book signings and it's like you have to have a copy of the new book. Like you can't take you can't just take your copy of Fight Club, to see Chuck Palahniuk in the store. Like, you've got to buy the new whatever it is.
No bringing any personal items. She'll only sign, like, the box that you buy the stuff in.
Well, what are you going to do? So you just sort of, how far away from her were you?
We were probably maybe like a good 10 feet. You have like all these, the ropes and everything set up, and then there are tons of camera people, and then we have to like, fight all the other ladies in the crowd trying to get pictures of her.
What was what do you suppose the line was once you had the item to get her to sign? What kind of weight?
I think the limit was 300 people or as time allows.
Right.
So we were there. She got there pretty much right at noon, and then we hung out for a while, got a ton of pictures, left, got some food, came back, and it was like even crazier than before.
And how much would that suck, though? You have your $150 whatever, and then you don't even get to see her because it's too late.
So did you get any clear pictures of her?
Oh, we got a couple really good ones. I'll try and email them to you tonight. My camera died, so I can't email them to you now, but I'll email you tonight.
Oh, that's rad. I'll put them on my website, though.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, but one really good one, like one right before the camera died, like the very last shot was like this perfect shot of her, so that's a really good one.
Let me ask you this.
Were there a lot of fangirls there?
I was just going to ask you what the crowd looked like. Would you say the crowd is obviously overwhelmingly female?
Oh, yeah. I was expecting at least a few gay guys. There's none whatsoever. It was
really?
Just all women.
That does surprise me, actually.
Yeah, there was one kind of weird dude. I had no idea why he was there. He was just, like, alone, kind of older, just kind of standing in front of us. And it was just kind of like, what are you doing here?
I don't know if he was
a stalker or what.
Is Sex in the City big in the gay community, the male gay? I would think that Kim Cattrall would be. But I don't really know. Is it?
All of them on the show did have their little gay best friends.
Yeah.
And I only know this. I know about Sex and the City the way my wife knows about Friday the 13th films. She's just wandered through the living room while I'm watching them, and that's kind of the extent of her knowledge. What was the average age of a woman going to see Sarah Jessica Parker?
It was completely mixed. It was mixed from a lot of teenagers to women well into probably mid 50s or so, and more plastic surgery than I've seen in quite a while.
I was going to ask you.
Fancy bar downtown last night, and I had that same exact thing happen.
Do you think that Sarah Jessica Parker has had work done? Is it when you say she's softer looking? Do you think she's had work?
Yeah, I wouldn't say no. I mean, it's kind of hard to tell. She's probably got really good, people working on her.
Sure.
And then it's also hard to tell because she's wearing so much makeup, and it's good makeup, so it's, like, really hard to even tell how much makeup she is wearing.
Right.
But she did look good, but I would say, she's 42 or something, so she has to have something done,
And was her hair, like, big and curly, or was it straight?
No, it was flat. It was, like, the flat, straight iron, parted down the middle, kind of like a little bit of roots showing.
Okay.
And kind of dirty blonde.
Oh, very cool. Did anyone scream any questions there, like asking about the Sex and the City movie or anything?
No. There was a group of girls who just screamed out, "We love you, Sarah Jessica Parker." But but that was about it.
Especially when a hurl.
But she was really sweet to like the people who had actually paid to go up and talk to her. She was really sweet to them. Like when we were walking back through, one girl was like, "Oh my God, she told me I was gorgeous," And so apparently she was like really sweet and very nice to a lot of the girls that went through.
If you paid $150.
If you paid her to do it, yes.
Excellent. All right. Final question, Sarah. Anything?
No, I can't wait to see the picture. Thank you for calling.
Please, email that to us. Excellent. Thank you, Eloise.
You're welcome.
All right, there you go. That's Eloise. Excellent. Fantastic. Okay.
$150. Wow.
You know, I mean, What are you going to do? You get the perfume for it.
It has been a long time since those Sex and the City checks were rolling in.
The girl's got to make a living.
Exactly.
At least she's recently famous as opposed to like Linda Blair. We talked about the Linda Blair appearance, who just looked leathery and terrible at the movie Madness, where it was like, I think she sent it like $15, and it was like, you had to bring your own Polaroid or something. It was just terrible. It was awful. So, you know, I don't fault anybody for making a living. Let's get this call, and then we'll break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. Actually, I was just calling in. I'm in California for a month, and I wanted to listen to your show on the Internet, and I was actually calling to figure out how to do it.
Scotty, would you like to talk to this guy?
Soon
as you said listening on the Internet, Scotty started to slink out of the room as though he was ashamed of something. Scotty?
I am ashamed. I'm trying to work on it, actually.
Nelly Furtado, I called you a couple weeks ago. I was selling those tickets on the Internet for what's the name from the Black Eyed Peas?
Oh, Fergie. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, you had gotten tickets for Fergie, and you were wondering how much you could unload them for.
Yeah, I dropped them for $175 for a pair.
That's not bad.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. Hey, while we got you on the phone, and Scotty, while you're here, now I don't mean to ambush you with this, but now some people have raised issues about the podcasts being sort of messed up or out of order or not correctly. And I only say this not to sort of put you on the spot about it, but only because maybe you want to clarify some of the issues, I don't want to get into the guts of how the system works.
Right. Okay.
But people have asked, well, hey, what's with the podcast? It seems a little wacky, or the hours are mislabeled or something.
Yes.
Do we at least have a handle on sort of what is happening so we can get it fixed at some point?
Well, we do have a handle. I think that last Friday has now been corrected.
We're going to have a segment now called Ask the Podcaster.
The reality is, here's what happens. You have your 4 hours. I have to take each hour by two and splice them together to make it four. Then we label it, and we send it off into podcast land where it gets relabeled out of our control. And that was one of the biggest problems, is people were saying, why is this, you know, the second hour?
That is true. Now, in Scotty's defense, that is true. When we upload it to our the company that hosts all our files, their computer system randomly renames it with a long, weird conglomeration of numbers and letters, and we then cannot name it back.
Well, can you click on the podcast right now? It says editors only. This site can be accessed by editors
only.
See, editors can log in here.
Now we're talking about two different things. This is actually, we're good that we clarify this, because we do have a lot of people who listen online and then try to track stuff, or on the radio and then try to track stuff online. There's two different podcasts. There is the podcast that some fans were doing for a long time, and that was at the Edit Here site. That's what you're talking about, sir.
Okay.
The Edit Here site, which I think they have just stopped doing that because I think it ended up being too much work for the guy. He was running, you know, a lot of money, a lot of time getting that. There is now a podcast that the radio station itself does that is at 970.am.
Okay.
It's on the Internet. It's like a regular URL. It's just not .com. It's 970.am. And those are put up. It's just we are still working some glitches out of the system. And I know that sounds like I'm making excuses, but it really is a kind of complex piece of software that we're using here that CBS has sort of saddled us with to do this. So 970.am is where the podcasts are. It's just it's a little bit of a challenge right now getting them up and smoothly running, sir.
All right. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. There you go. And Scotty, just for the record, because everybody's accused you of this.
Is it a broken record?
Everybody has accused you of this. Last Friday's show, because it's now a full week, is the reason it took so long because you were just really trying for large sections of last Friday's show to not be heard?
No, not at all. I don't know what keeps happening, but when I try to put these hours together things get mixed up beyond my control, I don't even understand how it's happening. And that's the only...
Hope we've clarified that for everybody. Now, to be fair, though, you are working with software and with a company, and I don't mean CBS, I mean the hosting company, that is not ideal. They do seem to make things really difficult, and I do. It really is a Herculean effort just to try to get those things loaded every day. So, in all fairness, and I mean this sincerely, it really is not Scotty's fault. Everybody who has to deal with that interface complains about it because it just makes a hash of the whole thing. So that is not, well, that is one thing that we do not blame Scotty J for. Okay, we got a break. We're so behind. We come back after this. More news with Scotty J, who's in for Tim Riley. Kiss, the Kissology Volume 2 DVD. We'll try to get that final one given away. Kissology Volume 2. Scott Daly's coming up. The Top 5 and Jim Roop. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. To do. Here's what's coming up later on in the program. Scott Daly's going to be here. We got tickets to Storm Large tomorrow. By the way, tonight, that is tonight, Dry County Crooks playing the Liberty Plaza Concert Series tonight from 6 to 9 p.m. The Liberty Plaza Concert Series, an outdoor performance by the Dry County Crooks, one of our favorite bands here. Outdoor venue, great music, good times, next to the Clackamas County Courthouse, 807 Main Street, Oregon City. There you go. It's from Aaron. Wanted to tell us about that. We love the Dry County Crooks. They're performing tonight. Tomorrow, Storm Large and everything else on earth apparently is happening. Mandy Moore.
Oh, my friend's band's playing tonight, too.
At the
Twilight. They're starting shows there again. So it's Twilight
Sleepwalkers.
Sleepwalkers, R.I.P., and a bunch of other bands. And it's at 12th and Southeast Powell.
So lots to do this weekend. And then tomorrow, like 15 different gatherings that I've been invited to. I will attempt to go to none of them. It's 503-733-2970. Let's see. So Storm tickets. We got that Kissology Volume 2 DVD to give away. Scott Daly's going to be here. We got to do this top five. We just got this real quick story, and we'll bring Dennis Pitzenbarger on in a moment. I just wanted to read this because I teased it earlier in the week. This is the last time I'm going to talk about Van Halen. Because, and they've got a date here at the Rose Garden, which I don't even care about. After several recent furtive tries, the reunion between the Van Halen brothers, blah, blah. You know, I'm reading this and I don't care. I don't care. Why did I even start reading this?
I don't know.
Listen to this. Listen to how sad this is. Let's welcome now Dennis Pitzenbarger to the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hi. I can't believe that your attitude about the
just bringing you on so maybe you can care about
just,
it, because I don't.
And just the idea that they're going to make it, which they won't.
And I love David Lee Roth. You know I love David Lee Roth. I just don't care about this. I'd be more excited about Roth coming to town doing a solo gig than this, frankly.
What would you take as the over-under of them making it?
Nah, they'll make it halfway through. Make it halfway through, several cancellations, it'll end abruptly. I'm telling you right
where,
now.
Where do we fall on the concert schedule?
Or like in November. I don't know where we are
December.
In the lineup, but it's in the fall. It's in fall, winter. It's like it's in the fourth quarter of the year.
Oh, we're done.
Yeah, no one. Let's see. Listen to the press conference. How sad is this? Walking in with Eddie, Alex, and Wolfgang. To the strains of the band's 1984 hit, Jump. That's how you know it's how you know it's a bad tour, because that was the song they... Look, let me just tell you this. There's about three different eras of Van Halen. There is the pre-Jump era of Van Halen. There is the post-Jump era of Van Halen with Roth. And then there is the Hagar era of Van Halen. One of those is good.
I went to that concert.
Jump is that's the song that broke the band.
Yeah, but
Jump
that
is the song
was,
that ruined that band forever.
That concert was still good because
you can't have a Van Halen song with no guitar.
Yeah, but the concert was still good because they played all the classic stuff as the classic lineup. You yourself said the best idea or the best concert you ever went to with Kiss was the reunion tour.
Yeah.
That was for me, unfortunately, not knowing at the time. The last time I was going to see them as a band.
David Lee Roth says, "Are you prepared to be better? Are you prepared for this to be better than it ever effing was?"
The enthusiasm is overwhelming, Mr. Anderson.
It just needed to happen about 10 years ago. You know what I mean? There's been too many false starts. It just needed to happen.
Years ago.
I'm past it. You know what I mean? I'm you know what it is? I feel like Van Halen the way that I sort of now feel about Star Wars. You know, Star Wars, don't get me wrong, I love Star Wars. You know, Star Wars great, huge impact on the culture. You know, I mean, it changed things forever, big part of everybody's life. But you know, Lucas talks about these new Star Wars movies and the new TV series. And you know what? It's Star Wars is now in the category in my head marked things I really care about and that meant a lot to me, but that I'm kind of done with in terms of investing my future time.
You don't think if they were here in town and you had an opportunity to go, you wouldn't?
If somebody gave me a free ticket and said, hey, we're going to see Halen tonight, here's a free ticket, I'll give you a ride, you know, I might go. But I'm not going to go out of my way to see Van Halen. I'm not trying to be a contrary and negative guy. I just don't. I cared up until a couple years ago, and it's just they waited too long. You know what I mean? It's like the girl that you're trying to get with and she plays hard to get for just forever and ever and ever. And by the time she finally comes around, you're like, you know what? I've kind of moved on. But, you know, call me if you're in the neighborhood for 10 minutes. But I've moved on. And I've just, you know what, you know that's it. They just toyed with the audience and just dragged it out for so freaking long.
See, Guns N' Roses.
And it, Wolfgang Van Halen, that's the other thing, that's the deal. You know, that's the comparison, like Chinese Democracy. You and I both know that the best thing is that Chinese Democracy never comes out at this point.
Well, sure.
And Axl Rose has got to know that.
But that's only because that's not the original band, minus the one. And, I mean, I just say...
And also, I just think because that moment has passed. Look, I hate to say that, you know I love Guns N' Roses.
Hey, I'm in denial about Van Halen. I admit I am in complete denial that I agree with you 100%. But I'm going to be in denial until I have to go back to Ticketmaster and ask for my refund.
I'm not saying it won't be big. I'm sure it'll be big. Guys will go. They'll have a great time. Whatever. It's just I'm saying for me personally, they sort of missed. I think in the culture, you've got to get the right moment for a reunion. Reunions have to happen at a certain point. And I don't even think you can define when that point is. It's a gut feeling. You know, there's a gut feeling for when the time is right. There's like this, here's an example, like the Smashing Pumpkins thing, which seems way too early to me. It seems way too early for it to be a huge Smashing Pumpkins revival.
Well, they broke up, what, like 6 years ago, 7?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't even gone. And Billy Corgan was doing a bunch of solo projects, and it seems like that Smashing Pumpkins reunion is coming too soon. The Kiss reunion was about right. That was like 15 years, you know? It seems like you've got to wait a little longer for some of these, and sometimes you wait too long.
I guess I parallel it with the fun that we had when we went to the one concert, the Kiss concert together. Yeah. Sarah, you were there. We have pictures. It was a great mm-hmm. time. I can just see, like, the crew of that core group of people going, having a row at that Van Halen reunion concert, if it happens, biggest yeah. if in the world.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That would be fun because you would, I think that even though you're, I agree with you to almost every angle but the one. If you got in the, you know, in the Rose Garden, you were there.
Maybe.
The
maybe
lights
I'd
came
feel,
down.
Maybe I'd feel different once I was there.
If you saw the lights go down and the music start and you heard that exact sound from that guitar, I think that you would have a
maybe. I might. You know, once I was there and if I heard, you know, whatever, I heard the, you know, that in the Cradle Will Rock intro.
Oh, sure. Drop dead legs or something.
I might feel different. I guess it just seems like, to me, I feel like they're just stringing us along. It's like, just get in the, you know, how hard is it? Just go, you know. You don't like each other. Fine, take separate buses.
Well, the safe part is we know David Lee Roth won't come out with the beaded hair like Axl Rose.
He's got hair again in this. I don't know how that works. He's got hair again in this photo.
Where would he get that, Rick?
I got to tell you, it's not the medical hair restoration because he didn't have it like a month ago.
He just had that all stapled in.
The MHR, medical hair restoration, that's not an overnight. That's not an overnight procedure. That's like a year-long procedure.
Maybe he hung out with Gilby Clark.
He got this the same place that like Elton John always digs up that new hair where it's like, you know, he just goes into the closet, so to speak, and you know, an assistant picks out the wig and they staple it on for the night. Let's get these and then we'll do the Kiss giveaway. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. This is Mark. I went and bought that book you were commenting on.
Youth and Revolt.
I did yesterday. I went to Powell's and picked up the only copy they had.
Excellent.
Just so nobody else wastes their
time. Congratulations. Have you started reading it, sir?
You know what? I started to just scan the first page as I was walking back to the car, but no, I haven't read it yet. But I can't actually remember the last book that I read. I usually read a lot of magazine and news articles.
Right.
And other things, so I really don't ever have time to get into a book. So I'm sure it'll take me quite some time to read through it, but I kind of look forward to it. You really pumped it up enough.
It's hilarious. I will say it's not only my favorite novel, but I will say that it is actually the funniest book I have ever read. And I don't want, like I said, I don't want people to think it's some snobby work of highbrow Western literature.
Oh no,
it is a contemporary teen. I hate to say this. It is sort of a teen sex comedy. In a book set in modern times, you know, in the Bay Area, and it just happens to be phenomenally well written. It's just a work of genius. So I hope with all in me, sir, that you enjoy it to 1/10 as much as I did. Because even if you enjoyed half of what I did, it'll be, you know, among the best experiences of your reading life.
I think I will. When you said it was made to laugh out loud a lot of times while reading it, was kind of what decided to sell me on it. And I have a lot of similarities with your personality in common, so I thought it would be a really good one.
It's a true story, actually. When I read that book, I was living in Utah, dating a different girl. I was with somebody else, but I was But I was still kind of a night owl. She would go to bed earlier. I would stay up. And I was reading Youth and Revolt in 1994. And actually, we lived in a pretty small place, and there were actually multiple moments when she would actually open the bedroom door, walk out into the living room, and yell at me to be quiet. Because she had to get up for work, and I was laughing so hard that I was keeping her awake. So that's the biggest endorsement I can give it, sir.
I got one more quick question for you, Rick. You've been talking about bands lately, and I know you don't like to leave your house, but Megadeth is coming, I think, on September 9th.
Really?
Yeah, to the Roseland. And
that's cool.
I've seen them about five or six times, and the last couple times I've seen them there, they're just a phenomenal show. I wondered if you were going to go to that.
Do they have a new record out or something?
They do. Came out about 2 months ago or so.
Because the last one I have of theirs is The System Has Failed, which is pretty, just a couple years ago, I think. Who are they, what is the new album called, do you know?
It's called United Abomination.
United Abomination, and what, do you know who they're touring with?
There's two bands, and honestly, I don't know who, I've never heard of them.
Okay.
No, I'm probably not even going to bother looking into them or going to see them. But the new album's pretty good. He bashes on the UN pretty hard.
I might see them. The last time I saw Megadeth was at the Clash of the Titans tour with Slayer and Anthrax.
With Anthrax and Slayer. I went to that, too.
Excellent. Well, at the Roseland, when? September?
September 9th is a Sunday at the Roseland.
I might do that. And, we're next to KUFO, so who knows? He might walk down the hallway by me one of these days.
Well, hey, they ought to hook you up. Absolutely.
That's excellent. Thank you, sir.
Take care, Rick.
All right, there you go. Let's do one more, and then we got to do the contest. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, Rick?
Hey.
Hey, I heard something this morning that I thought you would appreciate.
Yes, sir.
Jessica Biel's next movie, not next, but the one after the movie next.
Right.
Will be nude scenes of her in it.
Who told us that? Who? It's because
you got to hear this. There's a nipple clause in her contract.
Nipple
claws. You can only see her breast with the nipple from forward or side view. Well, isn't that the only way to look at them?
Well, I guess you could do underneath or above, I suppose. If she's, I only know about this. Sarah's thinking I'm being revolting. I'm just saying, really, if you were to think about it. I only know this because I read some article where she said she was really, she was already feeling awkward about her relatives seeing her nude on the screen. I didn't even see what the movie was, but I remember seeing she's like
the name of the movie too, but
because all we focus on was the fact that Jennifer Beale was going to be new. Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, she played a stripper with a handicapped kid.
Okay, I'm already making a note to ask Mr. Skin about that next Wednesday when we have him on.
So there you go.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. Yeah, she said she was already like really nervous about like my dad being in a movie theater. That would be weird actually to see have your dad in a theater like seeing you shake your cans. I mean, especially if. Not to be lurid, but especially if you are an attractive woman and you're nude on film, clearly they are filming you in a way to make you arousing or enticing. So it's got to be weird if you're a parent to, like, see your daughter filmed in a way that's supposed to make her all effable. That's just got to be creepy and strange. So it's like Thora Birch's dad off stage yelling thrust commands. Hi, Dennis. Oh, how you doing? Lord.
Well, that's the two things I always take now that I am the father of a small daughter. You know, it's as Chris Rock said, there's only two things I got to do is keep her off clear heels and the pole.
Totally. This is the other thing, stripper pole, by the way, is what we're talking
about.
That's
exactly what I meant.
This guy sums it all. He says, the fact that Eddie's kid Wolfgang is playing bass makes the whole thing pointless and a joke. That's the other thing. No Michael Anthony.
Well, they also, and then they call, I've heard some of the audio from the interviews, and it's like they call him Wolfie.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
How tough can you be? Hi, I'm Wolfie.
Hey, so here's what we're going to do right now. We're going to do another copy of Kissology Volume 2. We will attempt right now. Scotty will take Caller 5, and then if Caller 5 snuffs it, we'll go Caller 6, blah, blah, blah. Caller 5 right now at 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We will endeavor to give away a copy of Kissology, Volume 2, 1978 to 1991, from VH1 Classic Records. 7 hours of rare interview footage and live performance clips, including a European cut of the movie Kiss in Attack of the Phantoms. And that is the European title of that, apparently. We'll take caller number 5 right now at 503-733-2970 to win a copy of Kissology, Volume 2, on DVD. Oh, I completely...
If they goof up, can I default and win?
No. Dude, I don't get one, you don't get one. They're not even giving me one. Wait, hold on.
They're very bitter about this.
Oh, seriously, not even giving me a copy of this. Wait, let me play this while we're...
Hey, this is Gene Simmons.
And this is Paul Stanley. Call to win now.
Yeah, listen to that. I'm going to find reasons to use that in the future.
I just figured I could at least copy yours.
No, I don't have one. There were none earmarked for me. I was not allowed to wet my beak.
Do I need to go up and smoozle Dave Zinn, the gatekeeper, to try to get into the prize closet?
Yes, you do.
This is Gene Simmons.
And this is Paul Stanley from KISS. KISSology Volume 2, 1978 to 1991. The ultimate KISS collection on DVD is in store. Now, and we want you to have a copy. For more details on how you can win one, keep it locked to AM 970 Solid State Radio.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Hey, and by the way, while we're waiting for this, we were talking about this song. Sarah's generation will know this because it was sampled for Funky Cold Medina. This is Christine 16 of Love Gun. You could never sing this song now.
No.
You could never get away with this because it's like about relations with an underage girl.
When I told my wife what this song was about, she looked at me like, you're a KISS fan?
It's so catchy, though. Such a bubblegum song. It's such a poppy little song. Wait for it. Did you ever hear the Gin Blossoms version of this?
No, I haven't.
It's pretty great. Wait for it.
So sleazy. No. The voice part is
And that he was a school teacher. The fact that Gene Simmons was a school teacher before he joined KISS makes this song especially
creepy.
You've got
to get to the voice part.
Oh, no. The spoken word part here is the best and worst part of the whole song. Well, let me back it up. Here's Gene Simmons doing the spoken word. It was a different era, Sarah. It was a simpler time.
Yes.
We have to get to the most awkward line in the song right here.
Oh, we haven't passed it.
Here's
yet?
An icky line. So revolting.
Can't live without her.
All right. It's 503-733-2970. Let's see. Where are we going here? Is this, it's Dean 16. Dean, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick.
How are you, my brother?
Fantastic.
All right. Are you a KISS fan?
Hells yeah.
All right. Here is your opportunity to win a copy of KISSology Volume 2, 1978 to 1991 on DVD. And by the way, because we know the two great tastes often taste great together, if you win this, you win a pair of tickets, rather, to see Storm Large, Storm in the Balls tomorrow at the Wonder Ballroom. So, all right, sir, do you want to complete that KISS lyric, or do you want to answer a KISS trivia question?
I'll take the lyrics.
You'll take the lyric. All right, sir, I will give you some KISS lyrics. You must then give me the next line. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. You don't have to sing it. You can just recite it. I will stop you, then give me the next line.
Okay.
All right. Darkness will fall on the city. It seems to follow you, too. And though you don't ask for pity.
Oh, no.
Oh, I know that sound.
I meant trivia.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Let me do it again. And in fact, I'll even sing it a little bit here. And this is actually sung by Peter Criss, which is why I chose this. He was on our show yesterday. He used that. Darkness will fall on the city. It seems to follow you too. And though you don't ask for pity.
There's so much you can do.
No! Sadly, no, sir. The line is, there's nothing that you can do. Oh, I'm sorry, my friend. All right. Thank you so much for participating. Yeah.
Face, Doug Smith.
Oh, okay. Thank you. He just said, I am a failure. Really, I like it when the callers kind of take themselves out that way, but that was just sad. Let's do one more, and then we'll break. We'll have to break if nobody gets this. Hi, Chris. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. How are you, sir?
Hi, guys. What was the name of that song? Because
I was a pretty big Kiss fan in the very early days, and I never knew what that
was. It's Black Diamond, sir.
Oh, I've heard Black Diamond many times. But
Black Diamond, famously.
Kiss Alive, too, and those.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Famously covered on the, famously covered by the Replacements, Black Diamond there. Okay, sir, do you wish to complete that lyric, or do you wish to answer a Kiss trivia question?
Man, if you're doing 15-16, no problem. You know, I'm not going to, I'm going to take the trivia and see if I don't flame out.
All right, sir. Here is your trivia question.
Okay.
Let's see here. I'm kind of weighing in my head. All right, we'll make this an easy one because it is Friday. Kiss trivia question. What, and we'll take the large generalized answer for this. What is the birthplace of Kiss member Gene Simmons?
Oh, for God's sake. I don't know. First thing in my head is Illinois.
Well, you've got the first letter correct. Sadly, no, that is not the answer.
Probably Iowa. Well, I am a huge Kiss fan, and thank you very much for the opportunity. Have a good day, guys.
He runs in shame. Listen to that. Gene Simmons, born Chaim Witz in Israel.
Do you know this, or do you know this, like, in your head, or did you look this up before?
Well, I mean, I know it. I mean, I confirm it. I've confirmed it before the show. I looked it up to double check.
But this is something that you knew as a Kiss fan already?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
No, these all came out of my head, but then because I'm paranoid, I went and double-checked them all to make sure that I wasn't repeating an urban legend or something. But yeah, Gene Simmons, also known as Gene Klein, born Chaim Witz in Israel, moved to the United States, I believe, at the age of 4. So there you go. Gene Simmons, born in Israel. All right. Or you just want to do? You wanted to make sure that I'm not getting it wrong?
Yes, because it's making me sad to hear all these people.
These are all things that I know. Again, I double-checked them all, but this all good. And I deliberately don't go to Wikipedia to find a question. I deliberately find stuff that I know because then there's a better than even chance that hopefully a Kiss fan will know it too. All right, well, we'll give that another shot later on in the hour. We got a break here. We'll come back. Dennis Pitzenbarger, Scott Daly, another chance at Kissology Volume 2, Jim Roop, all of that, and more Kiss. It's 503-733-2970. Back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Show. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Hey, I'm just going to read this here. Rick, I thought seeing you... Oh, this is from Seamus. I thought seeing you finally sink to an under 50% success rate for the retarded was depressing enough. But then, to find out that Sarah has never heard of War Games. That's almost as finding out that... Almost as bad as finding out that they only... Is it Friday?
You okay with that talking thing?
No. But then to find out that Sarah has never heard of War Games, that's almost as bad as finding out the hot date you're with has a penis. I just, you know,
okay.
I mean, come on. And she's only 3 years younger than I am. At least I can still rely on Tim and Scotty
Seamus
for my
only...
hero worship. He's 29.
I thought he... Wow.
He does seem like he's 100 years old sometimes. He has the assembled wisdom of the ages. Let's see. How about this? This is from The Sun. Building boss Howard Shelley carried out the ultimate DIY conversion by castrating himself so he could become a woman. The 42-year-old dad of two decided on the drastic move after being told he would have to wait at least 2 years for a sex change on the National Health Plan. See, Scotty, that's why you don't want nationalized health care. All your womanizing takes forever. Oh, I'm sorry. We got to get Scotty here just a second. He found a website. Jim Roop is on hold. We'll get to him in just a moment. He found a website which gave a step-by-step guide to the eye-watering home surgery. Then waited till wife Janet went out before setting to work with a kitchen knife in the bathroom.
Oh, why is this not a penis watch? Oh,
I'm sorry. Let's. We'll go ahead and
take a look at
thank
my
you. Sorry, I'm not
penis.
Thinking all the way through today.
And my troubles start to melt away. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
We'll start with the money line there. He set to work with a kitchen knife in the bathroom. With the job done, he wrapped his severed appendages in a cloth and dropped them in the bin. That's the trash, I believe. Then he drove 5 miles to his local doctor, explained what he'd done, and was packed off for treatment at the hospital. Howard, who now wants to be known as Holly, said, "It was very painful, but the moment I cut them off, I felt all woman." He's now split with his wife and is Living in an all-girls building. Apparently some sort of group home. He revealed how he began researching DIY castration after becoming frustrated with medics. He said, none of them seemed to understand. They kept asking if I was gay or a transvestite. I'm not. In the end, I found out how to do it on the internet. It's amazing what you can learn there. Following the instructions, I sterilized everything and then made a tourniquet with some rubber bands I found lying around. The worst bit was stealing myself for the first cut is the deepest, as Cat Stevens would say. The whole thing took 6 minutes. It was agony. But once you start that cutting, you just can't stop. He's saving for a full-chain sex operation. He said, I just need breasts and hips. Then I'll be a real woman.
Take a look at my
your penis watch. Penis.
And my troubles start melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
I want to be called Loretta. My fetus will gestate in a box. Here's Jim Roop, ladies and gentlemen, joining us from Los Angeles. Why, hello, sir. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
How's your penis still attached, one hopes?
This last time I looked.
Seriously. The idea that, and because it's the sun, they have to use a headline. The sun is great. It's sort of the New York Post of Britain. Builder loses nuts and bolts. That's how they do that there. The best part is once you start cutting that, you just can't stop. I suppose that is true. It's like drinking out of a spittoon. Once you begin, there's no turning back on that, I guess.
Lord.
How's life?
Life's great.
All right.
Now, who doesn't know the movie War Games?
Oh, that'd be Sarah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
How old are you?
Everybody is astounded by this.
I'm 26.
This was 1983, I think.
Yeah, so I was 3 years old. I wasn't watching it.
But, I mean, it does seem like it's been on a lot, but maybe not. What do I know?
That's the one with Matthew Broderick and Ali Sheedy, right?
I would like you to listen to this, Jim Roop.
Shall we play a game?
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, there you go. How about global thermonuclear war? It really is a great movie. Here's a little bit of War Games trivia for you. We were saying this earlier in the week. Professor Falcon.
Andy Coleman?
No. That's the guy who works at the government. The Professor Falcon, the guy who designed Joshua, the sort of British British scientist guy who developed the computer system, named it Joshua after his dead kid. It was written for John Lennon, that role.
Is that right?
Written for John Lennon. It's not Peter Coyote. It's not Peter Coyote. This guy, this Scott Daly here, saying it's Peter Coyote. Are you? No.
It's not Peter Coyote.
Keep talking.
It's not Peter Coyote.
John Wood, isn't it?
It's John. Yeah, it's not Peter Coyote, film critic. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and I'll eat a big plate of it, you know? But I'm telling you, it's not Peter Coyote.
Peter Coyote wasn't in the movie.
No.
Okay.
Now
you're right.
Apparently,
I'm wrong.
Yes.
I
could have saved you all this work.
Who's the other guy? The guy who was the general?
Barry Corbin.
Barry Corbin.
And yeah. Michael Madsen is in it, too. He's about 10 years old, but Michael Madsen is in that.
Really?
Yeah, he's like one of the schlubs that works at the Defense Department at DARPA. Let's see. What's going on here? Well, blah, blah, blah. So this is the Paris Hilton law, right? That they'll probably end us calling it. They're trying to pass this law in California, which will traumatize Sarah and I, that would make it illegal to sell any photos of celebrities in jail or even to ask for them.
Yeah.
Like TMZ.
Yeah.
It would be illegal to even solicit them.
Well, what happened was, and everybody remembers this, when Paris Hilton was in jail, some online, it wasn't TMZ, it was somebody else, or maybe it was TMZ, they were offering like $500,000 for a picture of Paris Hilton in jail.
Yeah.
Doing anything. I don't get eating a sandwich, clipping her nails, looking at the stars, whatever. They would have paid $500,000 for that. And back in the Jackson trial, somebody in the courts leaked the name of the victim's mother, or the name of the victim.
Right, right.
And I guess the sheriff just sort of got fed up with that and wanted to make, although it's a misdemeanor, it's a non-jailable misdemeanor crime. You'll lose your job, you'll get a fine, misdemeanor-type fine. So it's not very much. I think I'd take $500,000.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it adds, like, how much can you really love your job, too? I mean, if you're... Because they were threatening to fire anybody at the L.A. County Jail that coughed up a picture of Paris. But it's like, seriously, I mean, how much could you really like that gig anyway? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. The problem is, whoever solicits it is also...
Is it the same fine for solicitation?
It's a non-punishable misdemeanor fine.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's still, I mean, really, it's just one of those, it's going to be, if you're TMZ, it's going to be the cost of doing business.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, well, what are they going to, they can't shut you down.
No. No, I mean, really, it doesn't even seem, it seems like it's just one of those laws that they are, that they're trying to get enacted because some celebrity has a lobbyist who is, you know, they're trying to placate some celebrity with a lot of money and enough power to get a lobbyist.
Yeah, you know, I think one the guy I talked to yesterday at the Sheriff's Department says this also helps celebrities feel secure that if we pull them over, yeah, I'm thinking if you're going to pull them over, you know, they're idiots.
It seems like they got larger issues anyway. If you're busy, if you're worrying about them taking photos of you in jail, it seems like maybe the criminal part of your life is the part
you deserve to be scorned publicly. Yeah. If
you've got additional issues
you're
to worry
Mel Gibson.
About.
Yeah.
True. All right. Hey, did you hear this rumor that Ryan Seacrest is going to host the Super Bowl halftime show?
Oh, don't. Really? I never heard that.
I don't know that it's true. It's from TMZ, but they are pretty reliable about some things. Word on the street is that the Idol ringmaster, Ryan Seacrest, will handle pregame and halftime hosting duties of the Super Bowl on Fox next February.
I don't get that guy. I don't get it.
You mean you don't get his celebrity, his fame?
He's Paris Hilton as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot on the show. He's sort of an ongoing subject of fascination for us because he does seem inexplicably popular, and it's like somebody handed him jobs in about five different arenas for no readily apparent reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he's the worst, most talentless guy on earth. It's just that he's so unbelievably nondescript. It really is the very definition of a random choice. You know what I mean?
True.
It's like he won a bunch of jobs in a poker hand or something. So, no, that is the rumor. I don't know if it's true or not, but that is something for you to feel preemptively bitter about.
Yeah, where's the Super Bowl being held this year? Do we know?
I don't know. I don't.
Well, I hope it's not in the West if he's going to host the halftime show.
Fire Island?
Fire
I'm sorry. Was that out loud? I didn't mean to say that. That was, what was I thinking? I'm sorry. He's all man. All right. Enjoy your weekend. Big plans,
sir? He's not all man.
No.
That's the guy you should check and see if his junk's still there.
he's lost his nuts. The first cut is the deepest, but he made it all the way through.
But once you start cutting, you can't stop.
No. Big plans for your weekend, Jim Roop?
Well, I got a new bottle of vodka, so maybe. My wife just brought a bottle of vodka home.
Excellent.
You know, so I'm guessing I'm going to be cooking up some vodka tonics or something.
Fantastic. All right, my friend. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you, as always.
We will speak with you soon. It's a pleasure. Jim Roop in Los Angeles. God bless him. There you go. Fantastic. Speaking of which, we still got to divvy up that box of Johnny Walker up in my office.
We do.
You don't drink whiskey, though.
I shouldn't drink whiskey.
I love whiskey.
Wait, do you not drink whiskey or shouldn't you drink whiskey?
No, I mean, I don't.
which is it?
A little bit of both. I don't usually drink whiskey because it doesn't agree with me very well. I become angry, Sarah.
Really? Because normally when you drink, you're happy, affectionate, Sarah.
I know, and I become like turbo bitch, Sarah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can drink as long as you're not around me, then. Just drink it when you're with somebody else.
When I'm alone.
Yeah, when you're alone. When you're alone at home with some cutting implements.
Yeah, I remember last time I drank whiskey, I picked a huge fight with Raul and fell on a bookshelf.
Excellent.
The power of alcohol.
Yeah. Scott Dowley from Film Fever Radio is here. Hi, sir. How are you?
Hello.
Hey, so you didn't see anything this week.
Oh, I saw some great films Wednesday night at the 48
Hours. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you saw the 48 Hours. Well, we can talk about that, actually, because those will be viewable. And why must our reviewing be limited to national fare?
Thank you. Exactly.
We should say real quickly, Superbad opens. We didn't see it because we were all at the 48 Hour Film Festival. But the word is it's genius.
Yeah, word is that it's genius. Also, will also open today is The Invasion, a modern-day retelling of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Well, that's
which
stupid.
Has gone to like four directors.
Yeah, I mean, and why does it need
Joel
to be done?
Joel Silver's involved.
They got lucky by remaking it once and having it be decent.
Yeah, exactly. So,
the 48-hour film festival. By the way, the last showing was last night. Well, that's not true. Let me back up. 48-hour film festival, and I know you have a lot to say about this too, because you were on the team.
I was.
They're filmmaking teams this year. There were 52 of them.
Yeah, this is the biggest year they had.
You draw your genre and a few other things out of a hat, and then you got 48 hours to make a film, incorporating all the elements that you draw out of a hat, basically.
Exactly.
5 to 7 minute film, 48 hours, and that means writing, directing, edited, cut, original score. From scratch, everything from scratch, 48 hours, it's got to be done and handed in. And that's, people say, well, 6 minutes, that's easy. I mean, it really is not.
No,
it's not. It's hard. I mean, you know how long it takes to make a music video?
Yeah.
This is effectively a music video and a half, basically, lengthwise. You got 48 hours to get it done and handed in. And it's, man, it's fun, but it's just a gut buster. It really is.
It is. And, I stopped watching, like, the second episode of On the Lot, that filmmaker reality show. And I guess for their finale, they have 3 weeks to make a three-minute film, I believe, or 2 weeks to do
a
three-minute film.
Grab me a river.
Like, come on. We could do it. No, it was great. We were on the, I was on the Geeks in the City crew with Aaron Duran leading the team. It was Jason Crump and Aaron from Vanished Twin Photography.
We Diana had, from downtown.
Diana from downtown.
The whole Geek Squad.
The whole Geek Squad was there. Fat Boy did a fantastic job with our score. It just really worked out really well. We had a lot of fun doing. We had some great makeup.
In case people missed this, tell everybody what genre you drew out of a hat.
Yeah, baby, we got superhero.
Aaron was actually wearing his Justice League of America, his Green Lantern shirt,
and his Shazam baseball
his
cap.
His Shazam hat. You know,
that's too perfect.
Full-on so tool, great. And I say that with all love and respect. Just a full-on goon machine reaches in the hat, superhero, and then of course it's me. Jairus, Nate, Patrick, this guy Noah, Chris, whole bunch of people, all of us, big, huge superhero nerds.
Yeah.
What did we draw? Superhero.
Sweet.
I found out, by the way, the odds, mathematically. A guy broke it down for me, and I apologize.
Oh, yeah.
I have lost his name here, so I apologize if you sent me this breakdown of the math. But he broke down the odds of both teams having the same in other words, you know, preferred genre, and then the odds of both teams then getting that genre out of a hat, because there were 52 teams, six genres to choose from, more or less.
No, there was like 14 genres.
No, but I thought there was six, and then if you turned it down, then you picked another one out of a hat.
There was like six wild cards and like 14 of the main ones.
Well, in any event, but the guy breaks it down here, and he says, let's see, I don't really have it, but I can't show you the math here, but basically what it comes down to is, here we go, a guy named Scott sent this to us. Scott Holler, his name is, and he says, Rick, long story short, assuming six genres, and it sounds like there were more than that, so it's even higher than this, but even if there were only six genres, the odds of both of us having the same genre and both picking them is 1 in 261.
Wow.
So that's pretty great.
That's fantastic.
I
got to tell you,
great,
when we heard you guys got superhero, that just kind of pumped it up for us.
Oh, no,
more.
It was like a whole, there could be only one! We were at the house. Nate and I were back at headquarters waiting for Jairus to call with the genre. And then we'll tell people how they can see these films. So Jairus called home. We answer the phone. And Nate picks up. He's like, all right, superhero, go. You know, because then the clock starts ticking. I mean, you got 48 hours and counting.
7 p.m., you're on.
To make a film. You got to hand it in by 7 o'clock Sunday. And then he calls back 2 minutes later. Aaron got superhero. You know, and it was a full-on geeky, like, it's on, you know, moment. Like, it was a geek throwdown at that instant.
It was so fantastic.
The films are going to be posted at 48.tv.
Yep.
It's a free registration. You'd have to sign up, but it's free. You just have to give them your email address so they blah, blah, blah. It doesn't cost anything. You can watch them at 48.tv. Now, they were screened Wednesday and Thursday.
Right.
They were all screened at the Hollywood.
Broken up in four groups.
52 films, I think it was, screened into four groups. The judges will rank the best 12, which I think we'll show next week.
Correct.
So I think next week at the Hollywood is going to be Best of Portland. It'll be the best 12 films of all of these shown next Thursday. So, I don't, you know, whether you're in it, whether we're in it, whether neither of us are, both of us, people really ought to go and check it out, because it is amazing what people can do with 2 days and no money.
You know, it truly is. I think our budget, and we had, the Diana from downtown, bless her heart, she not only was this one of the stars of our film, but she provided full craft services. We had breakfast in the morning. We had bacon and eggs and flour tortillas.
And everybody pitches in to sort of make sure that there is. And that's a weird thing. And that's a weird thing to think about. You know, people really don't realize exactly how important it is that somebody's got to make sure. You got to eat.
You've
got to eat while making a film.
Yeah. I thought it was funny because I was actually in, I guess, what might be called the bullpen for Aaron's team.
I was going to ask if you'd pitch in if they'd hit you up for a car or something.
Oh, I would have given and done anything. I was in the bullpen. Unfortunately, my services were not needed. And that's cool, but the funny thing was I was on the email train as far as what was going on throughout the entire filming process, and it was amazing how many emails were flustering back and forth between this and that. But it was not only the importance of how much you guys had to eat, which I did notice, it looked like the menu was full at all times.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But the beauty was after it was done was the multiple emails that were even more so than about food, that were about the drinking to go overcome the stress of doing it.
And I started sending Aaron taunting text messages
at
about 3 in the morning. So we we drew the genre at 7 p.m. Friday night. And again, you can see the best 12 of these films next Thursday at the Hollywood. The deal was Nate and I had to have the script written by 11 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting had to be done by 8 o'clock Sunday night. Saturday night, rather. Okay. And then it had to be edited and finished by 5 o'clock Sunday. So Nate and I are in there just like woodshedding. I mean, just trying to get it done. And I started sending Aaron taunting text messages around 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, I sent him this message 3 o'clock Friday night, Saturday morning. And I sent him one, hey, no pressure. It's not like all your geek cred rides in the next 36 hours. It'd be too bad if you choked, geek boy, superhero guy. Ha, ha, ha. And which was totally covering up because we were running way behind. And then I sent him one Sunday at 5 o'clock. It was a total lie because we were still editing, and I sent him one. I'm like, we're already finished and drinking. In your face.
You
are owned.
That's just me.
Totally. And it turned out, and I felt really bad because it turned out, and it was a stone bluff because we weren't even done.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we are already finished. Woot. You are pwned. You suck. You know, and it turns out that the camera had just eaten their tape.
Yes, it did.
The camera had just destroyed their
copy.
The rewinder.
Remember like those old VCR rewinders? It was like a VHS rewinder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have those for filmmaking tapes, too, so you don't have to risk it getting eaten by the camera.
At a faster speed, too. So
it just completely destroyed their movie. They saved it. I mean, it all turned out fine.
We got it.
They got it done. But at that moment when I was taunting him, like the rewinder had just destroyed
worst
their film.
Possible time ever, Emerson.
It was a total
coincidence, but I felt bad. Well, let me tell you, our whole thing went really, really well. We were done with the script by 10. By 1:30, most of the crew had gone to bed, and we had the script broken down. We started shooting about 11 Saturday morning. We were done with principal photography by midnight on Saturday.
Yeah, it was.
Which gave us all day. And we had a problem with sound. The camera that we had would not take a Phantom powered external mic or any external mic for whatever reason. So we had to sync the sound. We had to record the sound on a laptop and sync it in post. And that was just a nightmare.
We got to take a break here. Dennis, you actually got into, and I feel bad you kind of came in and they got overran by the Kiss thing and then the Scott thing and the so forth. But we come back, we talk a little bit to Dennis Pitsenbarger about what's coming up this weekend. Scott Daly is here. We may or may not have another chance to do this Kiss giveaway. We'll try. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. See, now the big douche fight has started over the math. It's one in 196. F that other math guy.
I don't know if it's too quick of a question.
It's like some sort of gay math slap fight. Jesus. I'm so glad I don't know anything about math. I don't have to weigh in on that.
When you guys picked your genres is when you got those. Did you know that there was X amount of genres and what they were? So you kind of had ideas in your head to write.
They change it a little bit every year. But we didn't prepare anything.
That's pretty amazing. You guys could do that in 48 hours.
No, it was cool. Next Thursday, the Best of Portland. Back after this, Rick Emerson Show. You stay there. Why, hello. We now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. Coming up at 3, it's Flash Friday with Tom Likas, Donna Mike at 7. Tomorrow morning, 6 to 9, Car and Driver Radio. Why, what happens at 9 a.m., Dennis Pitsenbarger?
Well, it would be miles around, and we've got a very interesting topic, and I would like to take just 1 minute to talk about it. I just got done doing traffic school because I got caught not wearing my seatbelt.
There you go again.
I can tell you this. If you go to milesaround.com, I'm a little bit more verbal about my explanation about whether
by verbal
or not
do you mean drunk?
No, well, that too. But, it was very frustrating. You know, the thing is, I'm an avid motorcycle rider, and the interesting thing is there was a gentleman in there, he's a motorcycle police officer, comes in there, tells us for a half an hour in his spiel about how not wearing seatbelts has to do with higher insurance rates and not wearing the proper safety gear while you're riding a motorcycle has something to do with that. Before I could even get the question out of another friend of mine who was in the class who got caught.
Is this what I sound like?
Yes. Another friend of mine who's in the class from Renegade Classic, he owns a motorcycle shop, he's up there saying, now, wait a minute. You're telling us that we should wear all this safety gear and do all these safety things, but yet here's a motorcycle police officer who's not wearing any kind of leathers, no gloves, no boots, no nothing, just a short-sleeved shirt, yet I don't ride my motorcycle that can go 160 miles an hour at the drop of a hat. I don't go even near the pavement without wearing full leathers with Kevlar skid pads and full-face helmet. And the guy actually says, well, that's different because there's a law. But yet he spent a half an hour telling both of us in the entire class, as most of them slept through it, and the of course the slideshow of look, this is little Billy. Little Billy had a life. Little Billy got drunk and hit a telephone pole, and now little Billy, you know, craps in a diaper and his parents wipe his drool. And it was just really, really contradictory, contradictive to its own effort. I mean, have you already turned the microphone on?
No, you're on.
Okay. I'm sorry. It was a very tough thing to go through because the thing that really irritated me is when I got pulled over.
I feel so relaxed.
When I got pulled over, the officer did not, A, ask me if I even had insurance, didn't ask me about the press car I had that had no front license plate, let alone tags, didn't ask if the girl in the front seat, who was my wife, was a, you know, Russian prostitute that I had, you know, captured from Idaho, let alone the dead hooker I could have had in the trunk. Didn't ask me any of that. Just had to get his quota done to get his seatbelt in. All right, I feel much better. We'll be talking about that on Miles Around from 9-11 on this very station.
I don't know what you're talking
and
about.
I will be slightly caffeinated comparative to now.
Oh, good Lord.
I don't actually sit down for 2 hours when I do this show.
It's time to stop and breathe. In through the mouth, out the nose. There you go.
Okay.
How are you feeling over there?
I'm...
Jesus.
Damn, dude.
Oh, and this. The other part that was funny. You paid for it in cash. This is a state-funded program. You paid for it in cash. When I asked for a receipt, I couldn't get a receipt. You know, I know things that run like that. They're called landfills and, you know, mafia bosses. But, you know, that's not that I'm bitter. I'm just kind of little.
Rick, are these the view of CBS Radio?
This is the view of me. There's nothing. No, it's not. I'm not downing it. I think I got a lot of good information about it. You know, the part that was good was making sure that I buckle my daughter in her seat correctly. I think for little kids and stuff like that, you know, it's just...
What about the little kids who don't have a daddy because the daddy didn't wear a seatbelt? What about that?
Mom, well, you're going to get a new daddy?
Yeah. They got new daddies.
What's with daddy's
dateline?
Why can't daddy talk anymore?
Find a new daddy on date.com. I mean,
the daddy's drooling. The other daddies can stand. Is it time to visit Daddy's gravesite yet, Mom?
Oh, now, yeah. Look, it's Daddy's skid marks on the road.
Daddy's skid marks?
I mean, as in the car he was driving.
Anywho.
You know, my thing is seatbelt safety, helmet safety.
Yeah.
I think that if you're under 18 or if you're under the parental guidance of someone, you should be, you know, lawfully made to do those things. If you're a person of age that takes their own life into their own hands, you should make that choice. That being said, I wear a full face helmet and leathers. I don't have to wear the leathers. I don't have to wear the boots. I don't have to wear the gloves. It's just I just thought it was very contradictive for them to parallel insurance costs and safety gear, and then the guy gets on his motorcycle and he doesn't even have gloves on. So it was just very frustrating for me and a lot of the other people that were in the class that saw the exact same thing.
Would you rather have a ticket on your record?
No, I got out of the ticket.
There we go.
But I won't next time. But next time I might have a dead hooker in the trunk, so you never know. I might not have insurance. I might even be driving a car that I stole that afternoon. He didn't ask. It doesn't matter. If you get pulled over for a seatbelt, you might even have to be able to take that ticket and put it on your record. But you will get away with stealing the car. Sorry.
Is this going to be your show tomorrow?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I've got people that were in the class that will actually call up. It's nothing against, I know officers, you know, hey, listen, they do a tough job. Police officers don't get paid enough.
Tana says my headphones on.
Oh, have you just tuned me off?
I don't even know what. No,
you're on.
No, you're fine. You're on.
Sorry. I mean, on in a volume.
The whole time ever I'll laugh at the song.
Oh, what are you playing?
Nothing. Don't you worry about it.
No, stop. Oh, now he turned it off. Turned it off.
You'll never know.
Let me hear it. Be nice, Sarah. I can't.
Dennis, we are being nice. We just let you rant for 7 goddamn minutes about a parking ticket that you deserved because you weren't wearing
ticket?
Your goddamn seatbelt. Click get her ticket.
Bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dennis, in your face. Click get her ticket. Bam. Yeah. What?
These are the views of CBS Radio and not...
Dad's in the casket and the silver spoon. All right.
I'm here. I'm just saying the topic that a lot of people want to know about. Some have opinions. Some don't.
While we're on the subject of
driving... I'll click it and tick it.
All right.
Or something.
You done?
Let me see that.
Ooh. No. You stay away from the whiskey. Fire, water, bad.
I might calm you down a little bit. My God. What a day.
Okay, thanks. While we're on the subject of this, our friend Mateo dropped this off last week. This is for Scotty's birthday, so Scotty will get second choice here. We have four small bottles of Johnny Walker dropped off. Johnny Walker Gold, Green, Black, and Blue. The Johnny Walker Blue was going with me. So that's right
there.
May I
see that? I won't open it, I promise.
And there you go.
Good idea.
Scotty J. Scotty J, if you will please enter the studio now, that would be greatly appreciated. Scotty J now.
You know the funny thing about this is literally worth its weight.
Yeah, a fifth of that is $200 and some.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is probably,
really?
Yeah.
You know, as they say, worth as much as gold.
So we've got
some
gold, black, and green. So, Scotty, because this was presumably a birthday gift for you, you may have the second choice here.
Ooh. Okay.
And let me know what other one it was between.
I've never actually heard of this gold.
Would you rate that? You rate the rest of these? Well,
is gold? Because I know that.
As I understand this, black is aged the least. I believe green is aged farther. Gold more than that, and then does it say how long?
Green's 15.
Okay, hold on. Let's stop. Johnny Walker Black is aged 12 years. Johnny Walker Green aged 15. Johnny Walker Gold is 18, and Johnny Walker Blue is 25.
I'll have green or gold, whatever one Scotty doesn't want.
Black and green are left.
Green, please.
All right, green.
Green's
all right.
Pretty good. I've had it before.
Awesome.
Yeah, green is good.
Okay, so there is Johnny Walker Green, Sarah, for you. All right, now, Dennis and Scott Daly.
I don't think Dennis
would you like to roll Shambo for this?
Oh.
What the hell was that?
The South Park Rochambeau?
Yes.
Fantastic. Stand up, Dennis.
Would you like to...
Okay, what am I doing here?
All right, here's the game.
How shall we determine this for Scott and Dennis? Assuming you would both be interested in this Johnny Walker book.
I'm very interested. It's been a tough day already.
Sarah, do we have a...
I don't know, do we have some kind of contest or something we could do?
What about that gay kissing chicken? Have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen guys do that in bars?
No.
It's where... I saw some guys do this one time in a bar. Two straight guys. And it's where... Two guys, look. They get about a foot apart, and then they have to lean in like they're going to lock lips, you know, like they're going to kiss. And then it's like whoever pulls away first loses.
That's a great idea.
You can have it, Dennis.
I was going to say, it's all yours, Scott.
Oh, it's fantastic. I saw two guys do that, and it's like they both have to start leaning in.
Maybe we should just, since it was for Scotty and you staked your claim on the $200 bottle, maybe you should just
give him the black.
Wait a minute. I kiss Scotty. Don't I at least get it for default?
When did you kiss Scotty?
Hello, when he was sitting right there. Remember his first day? He was under the gun for smoking.
I guess I forgot that. Scotty, well, we'll see if Scotty wants them both. If not, we'll have you guys flip for it.
If Scotty comes in, and I'll kiss him.
Scotty,
I can have it.
Scotty, this Johnny Walker Black. Would you also like this, or shall I have them flip?
Here.
I have a quick question. Did you give away the tickets yet? Because I've been
for
out
Storm?
Of the office. Yes.
You know what we'll do here at the end? Scotty, let's, because Storm gave us several pair to give away, why don't we do this? Can you clear out these phones and apologize to these folks? We're not going to have time to be fair to another caller.
He's not going
to
apologize. He'll on them.
Please do. And then I'll tell you what, Scotty.
I'll do it in my special way.
I'll tell you what. We'll take callers 5, 7, and 9 for the Storm tickets. Write it down. They each get a pair. We'll email it to Storm, okay?
Okay. Got it.
How about 9, 7, and 0?
You didn't even answer the question. Do you wish to have this Johnny Walker Black?
Absolutely. I like this whole kit.
Okay, well, never mind.
The whole kit here.
Did you say kit?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounded like there was an S and an H in front of it.
No, did you dump that?
Slurring. No.
Okay.
So, 5, 7, and 9.
5, 7, and 9. Okay.
I know they're numbers and therefore challenging.
Do you know what he's talking about?
Yeah, we're going to do... Yeah. We have the Storm tickets left.
Yeah, so do the call.
So we will take callers 5, 7, and 9.
Go and prosper.
You got it, Scotty?
Now.
Okay, you can leave now.
Okay, see ya.
Do you want your other whiskey?
Jesus, just go.
All right, grab it.
Go,
then.
Go away.
All right, go.
Thanks, Scotty. Jesus.
All right, we will take callers 5, 7, and 9 for the remaining tickets to see Storm and the Balls tomorrow at the Wonder Ballroom. It's 503-733-2970. Really, I know there's a lot of math sometimes in this program, but taking calls 5, 7, and 9 does not seem like, it doesn't seem like a calculus or anything.
I have to say that the Wonder Ballroom is the best place to see.
I've never seen anything
there. Yeah, that is a
ever.
Beautiful venue.
I've never been.
It fits her genre of music, especially when she does some of the slower stuff. It's everything that you would imagine. If you could just close your eyes and picture the perfect place to hear Storm and the Balls, that is it.
So that is happening tomorrow. Find out more details at stormlarge.com. Miles Around tomorrow, 9 to 11.
That's right. We might be talking about traffic school.
Fantastic. Scott Daly, filmfeverradio.com.
Yes, sir, filmfeverradio.com. Our show this week, Aaron and I sat down to start to record our show, but it mostly sounded, hey, I'm Scott. And Aaron. So we're doing a best of this week. We'll be back in full force next week.
That is exciting. I'm glad you came here to promote that.
Well, thank you for having me promote that. Yeah, I love coming here. Yes. You know that.
Well, we do.
Yes.
How long do we have here, sir, before everything starts?
A minute and a half.
Grinds to a halt. Okay. I got this thing about a guy
in school stories for us, Dennis.
I've got this got this thing about a guy impaled on a fence. Thank you.
Does that take a minute and a half?
Listen to this. No, but you'll never guess what he was impaled by. Normally, you think it's the groin, right? Because it's always groin and butts here.
Right.
A man has been impaled on a fence at a Melbourne railway station after he slipped while climbing over to catch a train. The accident happened about 1 a.m. today at Preston Railway Station in the city's north, a Victoria Police spokesperson said. Police said a 8-inch section of the metal fence went into the man's foot and up through his heel.
Oh my God.
No, but it gets worse. Oh. Not going to possibly get worse.
He's hanging by it?
He then was left hanging from the fence for 35 minutes.
Oh.
Was finally seen by a passing train driver who notified authorities. Police have to hold the man who weighed 100 kilos. That's about 180 pounds, I think. They arrived and cut a section of the metal fence to free the man. He had to go to the hospital. They removed the metal fence post still in his foot.
Oh.
So there you go. That's fantastic.
If he was out riding his motorcycle and wearing proper boots, he would have never had that happen.
Really disproportionately. Oh, and finally, just a brief note here. Sarah and I were talking about this before the show. Heath Ledger, some effed up photos of Heath Ledger as the Joker.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
Go to geekinthecity.com if you want to see new photos. There's another take on that photo of him holding the knife to Maggie Gyllenhaal, and there's a couple photos of the Joker in what looks like a police squad interrogation room with Batman.
Oh, God, is it good,
lay
Scott? Tell me.
Down.
Oh, it's
fantastic.
It doesn't really. Oh, it scares me.
We want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, Ed McCarthy, Scott Daly from Film Fever Radio, Dennis Pitzenbarger from Miles Around tomorrow, 9 to 11. And it has been the busiest, best week ever. So thank you all to everybody who made that happen. Our good friend Mike Thrasher helping us out, Mandy Moore, Peter, Chris's people, Storm Large, Davey Nipples, stormlarge.com for more information there. The Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970, Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, it's Tim Riley, Scotty J. And for Tim Riley today, as well as being the PA, and of course the gatekeeper, is Dave Zinn. Flash Friday with Likas next. Donna Mike at 7. Miles Around tomorrow, 9 to 11. We'll see you Monday. As always, be safe. Have a good weekend. Don't let the bastards grind it out. Watch out for snakes. Bye now.
Did you hear that?
I did.
That was me whacking it against my desk.